The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Missy challenged. All day, reports of voter intimidation and fraud from across the country flowed into the offices of Common Cause, an organization set up to increase voter oversight. For example, in Racine, Wisconsin, a working-class and minority area, there were reports that anyone who arrived at the polls without a picture ID found themselves challenged. Professor Spencer Overton, a law professor and Common Cause board member, gave the example of a woman who was challenged in Ohio.
Ohio Republicans also challenged Mary Sullivan, who's a 57-year-old African-American woman who's been voting legitimately for decades. Essentially, she lost her job as a receptionist last year. She was evicted from her apartment when money ran out, and she moved into a homeless shelter. So her name came up with an insufficient address, and she was challenged.
Overton added that high-level voter fraud is actually uncommon. Most voter fraud comes from low-level workers who are paid a dollar per registration, so they make up fake names to pad their wallets.
Sometimes a few bad apples pad their wallets by inventing registrations for Mary Poppins and other fictional purposes. Now, that is a problem, but it's a problem primarily for voter registration organizations that waste money to register and encourage fake people to vote.
For the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, this election was one battle in a war to forge a progressive coalition that includes labor but also brings in other forces. Wisconsin SEIU political director Robert Craig.
What we're hoping, and this is what SEIU has been striving for, is to make this not just about winning one election but about the revival of a progressive movement. And that means working with all of our progressive allies, with the environmental community, with women's organizations, with organizations that advocate for all people. And so, quite frankly, we can't do it alone. So SEIU doesn't want to just work as a labor union or with other labor unions. And America Come Together and America Vote, some of the other 527s have been developed in this election cycle, are true coalitions that involve all of the major sources of possible power within the broader progressive coalition.
Craig told Workers Independent News last night that a political push for health care reform was launched during the campaign.
The idea is that this election isn't the end of something, it's the beginning of something. We want to win this election, then we want to get real health care reform, and the campaign begins tonight. In fact, we have an ad running on CNN on health care reform. We're trying to connect very clearly the electoral work that our members are doing with the ultimate goal, and the goal and the most significant crisis facing working families right now is the health care crisis.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Is there no uptick in the economy to bring us cheer? Wages are stagnant, jobs are down, stock prices are in the ditch, corporate profits are sliding. But wait, here it is. Just when you thought nothing was on the rise, here's an economic indicator soaring up, up, and away. It's the pay of CEOs. Even if a company's stock plummets, its workers are fired, and its accountants are under federal investigation for cooking the books and looting the pension fund, the boss hog is still wallowing in the big bucks, now taking an average of more than $11 million a year in personal pay. Well, the boss's oink, we deserve it. Besides, we're just being paid what the market will bear. It's how capitalism works, so get over it. But hold it right there, bucko. Doesn't capitalism now operate in a global market? Haven't you been telling us that you don't have to pay fair wages to American workers because you can roam the global labor market and get workers for, say, 13 cents an hour in China, or even import skilled software engineers from, say, India to work for a third of the pay of U.S. workers? Yes, you have. So here's my plan. Let's import CEOs. We can get them a whole lot cheaper from abroad and get good ones, too. Did you know that the top bosses of major corporations in Europe, Japan, Latin America, and elsewhere are delighted to do CEO work for only $1 million or $2 million a year? American corporate bosses now are hauling away about 500 times the pay of a typical worker in their corporations. Not exactly a plus for company morale. But the ethic in other countries is much more fair. Bosses in Mexico, for example, are paid only 45 times what the typical worker makes. In England, it's 25 times. In Japan, it's only 10 times. This is Jim Hightower saying, so come on, you boards of directors, start thinking out of the box and applying a little global competition to the executive suite. Isn't that how capitalism works?
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, greetings, friends. Regime change, it wasn't quite. But America is still in here, is still intact, and we're still here. It's Tom Hartman with you, broadcasting live coast to coast on radio stations in California to North Carolina, and beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, archives of White Rose Society. TomHartman.com will get you into our chat room, which is already... Actually, folks have been in there for about an hour. I think that there's a lot of processing that needs to be done. I received so many emails this morning from people in absolute and utter despair. By the way, just a tip. We're going to have at the bottom of this hour, we're going to be hearing from Bev Harris of BlackBoxVoting.org about some thoughts on how that Florida vote might have happened. But however it happened, just as in 2000, however that happened, John Kerry has now conceded. In another hour, 50 minutes more or less, he's going to be calling George Bush and saying, good luck, guy. And Bush at 3 o'clock is going to be making his I Claudius speech, or perhaps his I Caligula speech. And I have to say two things. The first is, you know, so many of these people who have responded, we've had friends call, my kids calling, listeners to the show leaving messages on our machine. Of course, now you can actually call into the show. It's 1-866-889 8894, our telephone number, and the website, TomHartmann.com. And, you know, expressing despair. And the two things that I think are really important is number one, there is this normal postpartum blues. It is absolutely normal when your side doesn't win to have a certain sense of despair, to have a certain sense of all is lost. This is it. And I'm here to tell you, it's a normal thing to feel that. It's okay to feel that. We had actually a friend of ours called this morning in tears. And, that's the stages of grieving. Perfectly normal thing. You know, first people go through denial and bargaining. You know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross laid this stuff all out. And hey, Ira, if there's somebody on the line there, I'm not seeing anything on my IM, by the way. Denial and bargaining. Then they go through anger. Then they go through despair. And then acceptance. I mean, these are just these are the steps that people go through. And I think that, you know, wherever you may be in those steps, recognize that we're going to get to acceptance, some of us sooner than later. And then we've got to get active. I have been saying for a week or two now that progressives need to prepare themselves for the possibility, that George Bush would win. For me, the amazing moment, the oh my God, now I get it moment, was at 20 minutes after 1 o'clock in the morning last night. I was at WDEV here in central Vermont, is a station that carries this part of this program. They carry our Brunch with Bernie segment because Bernie's our congressman here in Vermont. And Ken Squire, the owner of that station, a friend of ours, he'd asked me to come over along with John McLowery, who's a local a former aide to Nixon, a former aide to Reagan, and a local conservative, heads the Ethan Allen Institute, does these libertarian / right-wing rants on the radio, has for years on public radio here in Vermont. And so Ken asked the two of us to come over and basically do play-by-play in color for the election last night. And so I was on the air from 7 p.m. until 1 o'clock in the morning, on the air, last night. And then afterwards, Ken and I went to the bar next door and sat there until about 2. I got home and watched the returns coming in until around 3 and then got up about 6. So if I sound less than totally coherent, my apologies. But anyhow, the aha moment for me came at 20 minutes after 1 o'clock. We were listening to a feed from the Associated Press, and Ken has promised me he's going to get a copy of this thing because most stations these days record at least one day's show so that, you know, if the FCC ever comes along and says what happened, they've got yesterday's show to pull it out. And we couldn't get it in time for today's program, but hopefully we'll have it for tomorrow's show. There was an AP feed, and the AP reporter said, and I'm paraphrasing now because I don't have it in front of me, as I said, but I will play this for you tomorrow, assuming that we can get it off their recordings. But I was there, and it happened. The AP reporter said, Karen Hughes has sat down with President George W. Bush and informed him that the exit polls from Florida show him losing decisively to John Kerry. And the president has taken the news stoically. Now, this was the Associated Press report, that Karen Hughes had told George Bush that the exit poll showed he was going to lose. And he didn't say, oh, that's terrible. He didn't say, oh, don't worry. He didn't say anything. And roughly two hours later, more or less, Fox News, in their inimitable fashion, well, actually, shortly thereafter, Ohio got called for Bush. And then this morning, of course, Fox News called, Florida got called for Bush. And we're going to talk to Bev in 15 minutes about how could it be that the exit polls show that Kerry won, but the electronic voting machines show that Bush won. That's an issue that's in that denial part of the five stages of dealing with grief and loss. And, you know, and I think we have to acknowledge that. And we also have to acknowledge that we have a real problem in our democracy when we can't trust our voting system. And all that said, in the second and third hour of the program today, in particular, I want to share with you, I'm not sure if we'll get to it in the second or the third hour, I'm going to share with you an absolutely mind-boggling bit of writing by a guy named Martin Meyer, who lived through the rise of the Nazis in the 1930s in Germany, a German Jew who lived through it, and how they viewed it, what their perception of it was, and or his personally. And it is a real eye-opener. But anyhow, here's the two things that I've been saying about this all along. Number one, you know, I thought that there was going to be a Kerry landslide. All the indications were, I mean, even Tucker Carlson's saying Kerry landslide. As long as you take out of the equation the possibility of rigged voting machines. Number two, I've been saying for some time, if we see the same kind of situation that Nebraska saw when Chuck Hagel left his job as CEO of the voting machine company that had the voting machines all across Nebraska and decided to run for Senate and beat an incumbent Democratic governor, winning even in black areas that had never voted Republican, ever. If we see that and the Republicans end up, or for that matter, if, you know, their ad campaigns were just more effective than Kerry's, which is a whole other rant. You know, why didn't Kerry, in retrospect, why wasn't the Democratic National campaign an attack campaign like the Republican one was? Why didn't they say this happened on Bush's watch? Why didn't Cheney ever meet his terrorism task force, blah, blah, blah? We can Monday morning quarterback this election to death. I'm really not all that interested in doing it. It's an interesting discussion. We'll have it from time to time. But I'm really interested in where we go from here. And this is what I've been saying all along, is where we go from here is that in many ways, the, you know, Bush, they have no excuses anymore. The Republicans have no excuses. You know, for 3 years now, they have been blaming the fact that conservative economic policies destroy an economy. And we saw this in the we saw this with the Reagan administration, and we saw it during the Gilded Age, that conservative economic policies will destroy a nation's economy, and that turning the trade policies of a country over to multinational corporations will destroy a nation's sovereignty. And they've been blaming this stuff on Bill Clinton and 9/11, and they can't do it anymore. And America is going to have to start holding these guys responsible. And so, you know, in a way, number one. And number two, this is an opportunity for us to create, really, I think, for the first time since the Gilded Age, since the late 1880s, the 1890s, a serious, real, legitimate, solid, practical, actually happening progressive movement in the United States. Let's take a few phone calls. Let's let some folks get this stuff out of their system. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Toby in Indiana is on the line. Hey, Toby, welcome to the program.
Hi. Happy to be on the air with you, sir. I'd like to do a little bit of a post-mortem on last night's election. I'm taking a look around, talking to friends, seeing what was on the air, and of course, this is Indiana, often referred to as quote-unquote flyover country. And what I've noticed is there are a lot of people who it would be in their economic best interest. These are people making under $25,000 a year, and they have kids, to vote for a Democrat. Yet they vote Republican. They're voting on a lot of these social issues, you know, abortion. Right. They're the single issue abortion voters and things like that.
Well, this is where Karl Rove was so brilliant. They looked at states where they thought, you know, we need something to push us over the top, and in those states where they could successfully do it, they got onto the ballot. Principally, it was gay marriage. That was the main thing. There were a few abortion things here and there, but the main thing was gay marriage. They got a thing on that said, you know, ban gay marriage in this state, and they knew that that would bring out people who otherwise may not come out. And once they got there, of course, they're going to vote for George Bush. And, you know, I believe it was 11 states that had these things, and that was certainly part of their strategy. These guys left no stone unturned.
It seems to me like the Democrats have not been really trying to connect with or have been trying to reach out to this group of people. They're not receiving any messages about why they should vote Democrat and why that's in their best interest.
I agree.
And
I agree.
I think that's something we need to work on.
Yep, that's the other half of the good news of this weekend, and that is that the not only is the Republican Party over the next 4 years either going to change or implode, but so is the Democratic Party. This is a watershed moment. Mark my words. This is a major turning point in American history, and ultimately it's going to be a turning point for the better. It may be, you know, we may have a couple of years of rough sledding to go, particularly if Bush stays to his policies, which, you know, Reagan at least had the rationality to raise taxes every year for the last 4 years of his presidency. But, you know, Bush stays to his policies. There is going to be a disaster, and he's going to be held accountable for it. Unless he can engineer and say, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I feel much better.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the call. Unless Bush can manage to engineer another terrorist attack, or allow one to happen, you know, not pay attention to things like they didn't before 9/11. In which case, he'll have something else to blame it on. I mean, you know, he always has to have something to blame it on. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Now life's too short to take every route.
Yeah, welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Life's too short to be in despair, too. We got to get past this. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. By the way, I got dumped out of our chat room. It appears that the chat. Our live chat is sponsored by the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, and I know they've been talking about upgrading the software. My guess is that's going on right now. So if you're trying to get into our chat room and it's not working, just, you know, wait a few minutes and try it again. 1-866-889-8894. And let's see here. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm great. What's up?
Well, I think it is a sad day for America, but, you know, I heard you say that we've got to get organized, and of course, we on the progressive side can always do better, but I'll tell you, there's a couple of things that disturb me. Number one, you know, I was not aware until really the actual votes started being counted that these exit polls were showing a landslide for Kerry. And yeah. I can't believe that there would be such a discrepancy between those exit polls and the actual vote. So that does lead one to believe, even though I may sound like a sore loser, that there was something crooked about the machine.
Not well, and the exit polls in those states that were not using electronic voting machines were not showing those discrepancies.
Okay. Now, let's assume, just for the sake of argument, that everything was on the up and up. Now we got another problem. We got the people in the South and out in the prairie states who would vote for a horned toad if he was a Republican, I think, you know. And then we have the anomaly of states like Indiana, which is my southern neighbor, and they are probably the most southern of the northern states, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
I go over that, you know, I've gone over that border, and I swear to God, as soon as I get over that border, I see Confederate flags all over the place. And this is in the northern part of Indiana.
Yeah.
Now, Ohio is a different story. Now, Ohio, if you wanted to take a typical state in the whole Union, it would probably be Ohio. But I heard an alarming statistic that one-fourth of all the jobs that have been lost in this country are in the state of Ohio. Now, that either means to me that the people that are laid off aren't voting, and the only people voting are those that are working and have a good job, or that these people are being distracted by things like gay marriage. Now, by the way, I voted against the gay marriage amendment here in Michigan. I'm against abortion. But, you know, to me, none of that stuff matters unless you have food on your table. You haven't got time to worry about school prayer or gun ownership or anything else if you don't have food in your stomach.
Yep. And these are really serious issues, Rick. And then the bottom line is that in my opinion, the Democrats this time around, first of all, you know, we'll see ultimately, hopefully, someday we'll know who really won this thing. But even if it happened exactly the way it happened, first of all, you know, 51, 49, 47, this half of America still believes in democratic values.
Sure.
That's one heck of a lot of people. And for Bush to try and rule as if he's Emperor Rex, you know, as if the entire country is now behind him, it ain't going to work.
Well, they don't care, though.
It's just not going to work.
They didn't care when they lost the popular vote.
Oh, I know.
What do you think they're going to do now?
I know. And the other thing that I found really surprising was that the only 1 out of 10 eligible people between the ages of 18 and 30 voted. And everybody was talking about the youth vote is going to come out. It's going to be so huge. Turns out it didn't. It wasn't, apparently. And when we get a new Supreme Court And all of a sudden, a whole lot of things get a whole lot more criminalized, and the government gets much more in our faces, as if they could be. But yes, they can be. I have a feeling that the next generation is going to have a rude awakening. They just, you know, they didn't live through what this country was like in the 50s and 60s. I remember segregated bathrooms and dining places, and I remember when a girl in my school died getting an illegal abortion, and my kids have no memory of that. They have no experience of that.
There's a couple of things, too, that are kind of alarming, and I don't say this because I dislike Hillary, but looking forward, I think if she gets nominated, I think she's going to get creamed, so that she would not be a good nominee. And then check this out. Possibly Chief Justice Clarence Thomas?
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, I think Scalia is the guy who's in line for Chief Justice, but that's just as bad. It's absolutely just as bad.
It is bad.
Rick, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, where despair is not an option. Still get active.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. A consumer alert was recently reported in a leading consumer testing magazine. It warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. I would never make a bagless vacuum because they're filthy. My 8-pound Oric XL is hypoallergenic. Try one free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. You'll breathe easier knowing it's an Oric XL.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Working people, many of them lifelong voters, arrived at the polls yesterday to find their legitimacy challenged. All day, reports of voter intimidation and fraud from across the country flowed into the offices of Common Cause, an organization set up to increase voter oversight. For example, in Racine, Wisconsin, a working-class and minority area, there were reports that anyone who arrived at the polls without a picture ID found themselves challenged. Professor Spencer Overton, a law professor and Common Cause board member, gave the example of a woman who was challenged in Ohio.
Ohio Republicans also challenged Mary Sullivan, who's a 57-year-old African-American woman who's been voting legitimately for decades. Essentially, she lost her job as a receptionist last year. She was evicted from her apartment when money ran out, and she moved into a homeless shelter. So her name came up with an insufficient address, and she was challenged.
Overton added that high-level voter fraud is actually uncommon. Most voter fraud comes from low-level workers who are paid $1 per registration, so they make up fake names to pad their wallets.
Sometimes a few bad apples pad their wallets by inventing registrations for Mary Poppins and other fictional purposes. Now, that is a problem, but it's a problem primarily for voter registration organizations that waste money to register and encourage fake people to vote.
For the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, this election was one battle in a war to forge a progressive coalition that includes labor but also brings in other forces. Wisconsin SEIU political director Robert Craig.
What we're hoping, and this is what SEIU has been striving for, is to make this not just about winning one election but about the revival of a progressive movement. And that means working with all of our progressive allies, with the environmental community, with the women's organizations, with organizations that advocate for all people. And so, quite frankly, we can't do it alone. So SEIU doesn't want to just work as a labor union or with other labor unions. And America Come Together and America Vote, some of the other 527s have been developed in this election cycle, are true coalitions that involve all of the major sources of possible power within the broader progressive coalition.
Craig told Workers Independent News last night that a political push for health care reform was launched during the campaign.
The idea is that this election isn't the end of something, it's the beginning of something. We want to win this election, then we want to get real health care reform, and the campaign begins tonight. In fact, we have an ad running on CNN on health care reform. We're trying to connect very clearly the electoral work that our members are doing with the ultimate goal, and the goal and the most significant crisis facing working families right now is the health care crisis.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And the beat goes on.
You know, America is an incredibly resilient nation. We have been through loony presidents like John Adams imposing the Alien and Sedition Acts and throwing his enemies in prison. We've been through a civil war. We've been through two world wars. We've been through the War of 1812. We were attacked by the British again. We have been through so much. We've been through incompetent presidents. We've been through criminal presidents. We've been through impeachments, Nixon resigning. We will get through this. And not only will we get through this, but I'm telling you, this is a good thing. This, mark my words, ultimately we will see that this is a good thing, because it's one of those situations where it's time to lift up the rugs and look at what's growing underneath. And that's going to happen. It's absolutely going to happen, because it's not like 99% of America voted for George Bush yesterday. You know, according to the so-called official polls, it was more like 51, 52, 53%. And that means that there's still a lot of people scratching their heads going, hey, what happened? This guy doesn't represent my values. There is still a loyal opposition in the United States, even though our political system has set it up so it doesn't quite look like it. But there absolutely still is. Bev Harris founded blackboxvoting.org and is absolutely one of the pioneers in bringing the whole issue of electronic voting machines to the fore. And Bev, Bev, welcome to the program here today.
Well, Tom, it's always nice to visit with you.
I got to tell you, Bev, you are absolutely one of my favorite people. I send so many people to your website, blackboxvoting.org, not .com.org. And you've done such important work. We've also got a bunch of people on hold here who want to get onto the program, so maybe you and I can take some calls together and talk to some of these folks after a few minutes. But I know that you've got some breaking news, as it were, that you want to share with us. What's going on here?
Well, what we did last night, you see, everybody was watching the election results. I already knew. I knew from a number of different indicators. And so I didn't even watch the TV. I was busy fulfilling the largest Freedom of Information Act request blitz probably in history. By 8:30 Pacific time last night, every county and jurisdiction in the United States had a two-page public records request, which they must comply with, which requests, actually posted on our website, the items we requested. We consulted with about 8 computer security experts in coming up with this, but a number of specific internal audit logs that are computer-generated, a number of records that, you see, once it's committed to paper and pencil, they have to give it to us, and many of the county jurisdictions didn't realize what we were going to ask for, so we got a bunch of different information, things on the types of problems they were experiencing that they didn't tell the public about, and we will be doing some very specific auditing using the computer-generated audit logs, which they must provide. Now, people will tell us, well, maybe they could alter those, and that's true, they could. The first one that we got, which was from an election 6 weeks ago, had 3 hours deleted from the audit log. But when you alter it in that way, it's like the 18 minutes missing from the Nixon tapes. It's sort of obvious. Okay, he might have been talking about his dog, but what was on that 18 minutes? When
now,
you have three
Bev,
hours to elect tonight, you got to ask, what was on that?
Yeah, Bev, what do you expect? You know, last night, I told this story at the beginning of the hour. Last night, I was doing play-by-play on this thing for a local radio station here in the Republic of Vermont. And the AP report came over at 12:20 a.m. Eastern time, where they said that Karen Hughes had sat George W. down and told him that the exit polls in Florida were showing that he was losing by 4 or 5 points. And he took the news stoically, is how the AP reporter said it. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. The exit polls are showing that he's losing. And then 20 minutes later, the networks called Florida for Bush. And my first thought was, Bev will appreciate the irony of this. Do you think the Florida election was stolen? I mean, let's just lay it on the table.
I think the Florida election was stolen, as was the election in many, many states. Let me tell you when I knew. Was when I knew they were calling various states. First they called them, too close to call or for carry or whatever, according to the exit poll. Then the second source of data came in, the voting machine tallies, and they started reversing the exit polls and saying, oh, no, no, it's going this way. Well, most of the country was then in enough that they were calling it for the Republicans when we got Alaska's exit poll things in. Because, of course, Alaska is even more Pacific than Pacific. It's way out in the Aleutian time zone or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And Alaska, which is a stalwart Republican state, they've got a very ethnically diverse population, but they go pretty heavily Republican, was exit polling Democrat. If Alaska exit polls Democrat, you got a problem if other places that are more have a less strong
that are more likely to be Democratic are polling Democratic.
I mean,
in other words, there was
me was that there yeah that
there really was a Kerry landslide.
Very heavily Democrat.
Yeah. In other words, there really was a Kerry landslide, in your opinion, and
right.
And these machines got hacked and the stuff got changed.
Exactly.
Bev,
probably got hacked through modems.
Yeah, via modems.
In many cases.
Yeah. As apparently our chat room has been, by the way. We're trying to get this thing back up. But 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Bev, do you mind taking some phone calls here? Let's talk to some listeners.
That'd be great.
It may be on or off topic. I'm not sure. We'll just, people need to process this stuff. Get this stuff out of their guts. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Brian in New Jersey's on the line. Hey, Brian, you're live here with Tom Hartman and Bev Harris.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Bev. I was pretty sick to my stomach this morning when it all happened, but now I'm just hoping that what Bev's doing with this voter fraud, hopefully they will find something that outs these people. If not, I think it is good, like you're saying. We'll have to hold Bush accountable for the last 4 years, and we'll have to hold him accountable for what happens now. So maybe the 50% of America that voted for him will wake up and go, oh my Lord, what did I do? All I have to say is, let's pray that we can make it through these tough times.
Well, I think we have to do more than that, Brian. I think that this is a marvelous moment in that this could be the beginning of a true progressive movement. This is, I still think that the last 4 years, a lot of progressives, a lot of liberals, a lot of Democrats, pretty much sat on their hands thinking, this George guy, he's screwing things up so bad. He's got the whole world angry. He's got America angry. We don't really have to do anything. It wasn't until the last couple of weeks that people really started getting worried. And now, here's some cold water in the face, guys. It's time to get organized.
I haven't been sitting on my hands, but
I know you haven't.
More active than I've been.
Yeah, I know you haven't. I know a lot of the callers of the station haven't. Brian, thanks for the call.
Thanks,
Tom. It's great to hear from you. And Bev, what are your thoughts? Don't you agree with that?
Oh yeah. I mean, this is not going to get handed back to us by some public officials. We have to go out there and make it happen, and we have to do so in a legal and ethical way.
Yeah.
One of the things that we've been working on at blackboxvoting.org, and we had this put in motion long before this election because we knew that this kind of thing was likely to happen, is we've got to be able to force transparency into the system. And the way that you win a battle, I think I may have told you this before, if you have to win a fight and you're a little guy and you're up against a big guy, you use judo. You use the weight of your opponent against himself. Well, the weight of a bureaucracy is in its rules and regulations. So before they get a chance to change those rules and regulations next year when they've convened a new Congress, we need to go through and use those rules against them. And one of the best ones we've got going for us now, before they try to change it, is the Freedom of Information Act rule. Because generally they must.
Yeah, and you're using that aggressively. Is there a way that citizens can help you and support your efforts, Bev Harris?
Yes. Well, there are a couple of ways. One is there are a number of jurisdictions that we need to get different kinds of contact information than we have, and it has been kind of thing where it takes a while to search out on the web or a couple of phone calls. We need to get some contact information for the county attorneys and so forth.
So I'm assuming people can find that people can find that at your website at blackboxvoting.org.
Yeah, they can find out how to do it. And another thing is the Freedom of Information requests are not free. We're estimating it will cost us up to $50,000 just for the copying and processing charges alone for what we're doing.
Yeah.
But what we're doing is powerful enough that I believe it will uncover not only voting fraud in the electronic machine, but also racketeering and collusion among certain public officials.
Right, and people presumably can make donations to that effort also at blackboxvoting.org.
Right. So people can help by, tooling around the Internet and making phone calls and helping us get some information for the database that we've had a hard time coming by, or they can help, by making donations And already I can tell you the state of Minnesota has told us they're going to decline to cooperate as much as they can. They're basically meaning they have to give us the records, but they're going to stall as long as they can. And these are the kinds of things citizens need to know so they can say, hey.
And you need activists in Minnesota who are involved in this thing. And I know we have listeners in Minnesota.
They're calling on their public officials to say, what do you mean you're not going to give us that information until as long as possible?
Yeah, so go check out blackboxvoting.org, not .com.org. Somehow the .com ended up in somebody else's hands and, bad news. Anyhow, Paulette in North Carolina is on the line, 1-866-889-8894. Paulette, you're live with Tom and Bev. What's up?
Hi, Tom and Bev. Well, I'm just, together with almost 60% of the country that's absolutely stunned today and really in disbelief. But, my feeling is that if the Republican Party had their way, we would be living in a church state and George Bush would be king.
No, he'd be Pope.
He'd be Pope. No, he really doesn't recognize Catholicism, but the thing that I think is hurting us is we have allowed the Republicans to take control of the God card.
Yeah.
And they have made it so that they have told people, if you don't vote Republican, you're going to hell, you're not a Christian, you don't have faith.
You know what's ironic, Paulette, is that there are more Christians in the United States who vote and are registered as Democrats than there are who vote and register as Republicans.
That is correct. And the thing is, we mustn't assume that more people voted for Bush. That's the key.
Rush is saying on his channel, while I was getting you on, I had flipped through Rush, and of course he's saying that the exit polls were manipulated.
Yeah, of course.
That's right. How do you do that?
There you go. Yep. People came out.
I really cannot believe that John Kerry didn't win. The mess that George Bush has made of our country, inside our country and internationally, is just something my kids and my grandchildren are going to have to pay for years to come.
Yeah. Well, it's and I agree with you, Paulette, and we have to recognize the stages of loss, that the first one is denial. And, I can't believe that he lost. Then bargaining, then anger, then despair, then acceptance. And I think that on the one hand, we need to go through all five of those and say, okay, as John Kerry is saying, in about 15 minutes, he's going to acceptance, it's over. However they did it, they got it. But at the same time, we then have to use that as an energizing force to motivate us forward rather than pull us back. And I know you, Bev Harris, are doing great work on this at blackboxvoting.org. Bev, let me take another call here, if that's all right.
Yes.
Let's go to Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Well, this has been a night, and like you, I haven't slept much. So I'm reminded, I think that the new motto for the Republican Party should be taken from P.T. Barnum. No one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American public.
Yeah, was it P.T. Barnum who said that, or was it,
it was
one of the...
It was T. Barnum.
Yeah, I thought it was one of the yellow newspaper guys, but in any case.
Yeah. And then for the progressives, I think that our new motto has to be from Friedrich Nietzsche, that which does not kill you makes you stronger.
Amen. Amen. Well
right,
said.
Right.
Well said.
And have to remember maybe the American public did not vote for Bush, so maybe they weren't as dumb as we thought.
Yeah. Thank you, Chuck. And that's the point that Bev keeps saying, is that Bush actually, in your mind, Bev, and you've really looked at this, if you look at the states, here in Vermont, for example, we don't have any electronic voting machines. In fact, most of the people in the state who voted with pencil and paper, and it was counted by a volunteer sitting in a little town of 300 people.
Yes.
And I was doing election returns last night until 3 o'clock, till 2 o'clock in the morning, with a local radio station. And Kerry took the state like 70-some-odd%.
Right.
I mean, it was incredible. Right. And not only that, the Republican governor who won 2 years ago here with only 40-some-odd% of the vote, because there was a progressive on the ticket who was very strong, a guy named Anthony Polina, and a Democrat, Peter Shumlin. The two of these two guys on the left split the ticket. So the Republican governor ended up winning with less than 50% of the vote. And he's been a reasonably decent governor. He's kind of governed from the middle. He's kind of a Howard Dean kind of Republican. Mm-hmm. And Jim Douglas. And he won more than 50% of the vote this time. So you've got people splitting the vote here in Vermont 70% going to Kerry, 52%, 53%, 56% maybe even, going to the Republican governor. And Bernie Sanders, you know, the independent getting 60-70%, the Democratic senator, Pat Leahy, getting 60-70%. I mean, you know, people were, we know that the votes were really clean because they were done by hand here. And yet in these states with the electronic voting machines, we're getting the most bizarre results that are inconsistent with the exit polls, whereas here in Vermont, it was absolutely consistent. Let's take a couple more calls here. David in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Hi, Bev.
Hi.
Forgive me for being so naive, but what in the world is Kerry doing delivering a
conceding
speech? If all this is true, what you say about the mismatch of the exit polls and the electronic voting, then isn't there something to hang on and fight for here? I mean, even Gore, who everybody said wimped out, lasted longer than this.
Yeah, I was asking myself the same question, and David, I don't honest to God, I don't have an answer for you to that. I'm disappointed.
Yeah,
I'm disappointed.
Me too. I'm far from acceptance.
Yeah.
I don't know how long
there you
it's
go.
Gonna take me to
may,
make it.
May take a while. We got about a minute or about 20 seconds here, Bev. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I can think of actually one reason if there's something particular working in the background, but it is very disappointing. There may be other things at play that we don't know about right now, such as a sting on vote fraud, but that's pretty remote.
That's interesting. Bev, can you stick around over the break? I'd like to wrap this thing up with you. We got to take a break here. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research is responsible for the following message. It was not approved by any candidate nor by any candidate's committee.
Hello, my name is Cindy, and I am a progressive. For many years, I've supported Ralph Nader, always admiring his many accomplishments. However, at this critical time, I cannot support his candidacy. You see, I have Parkinson's disease, and embryonic stem cell research may one day save my life. George W. Bush has severely restricted funding for stem cell research. He also threatens to jail doctors and scientists who want to use nuclear transfer research to cure debilitating diseases. On the other hand, John Kerry vows to remove President Bush's restrictions and to openly fund this vital research. Ralph Nader recently admitted that he has no chance to win this presidential election. A vote for Nader can only be a vote for Bush. Please don't throw your vote away. My life depends on it. Thank you.
A university taps the deep waters of a nearby lake to keep its campus cool. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Cornell University is a major research institution that's located near Cayuga Lake, one of the Finger Lakes in upstate New York. Cornell uses a lot of energy for air conditioning during the summer, and a few engineers found a creative way to use Cayuga Lake to cool off the campus. Lanny Joyce is an engineer at Cornell's Utilities Department, and he helped develop the university's Lake Source Cooling Project. He says Cayuga Lake is so deep that only part of it warms up in the summer. Joyce says there's a layer of frigid water at the bottom of the lake all year long, and the university is using it to cool pipes that provide air conditioning to the campus.
We're saving 87% of the electricity of doing cooling the conventional way, which makes an annual electric use reduction in the neighborhood of $1.5 to $2 million a year. So it's a significant savings in electricity use, and something that's a huge benefit to the global environment by not having to generate that electricity in some regional power plant.
The university performed environmental assessments before and after pipes were laid for the cooling system. Some people worried that the lake might warm up because the water that comes back from campus is warmer than when it was pumped out. Joyce says that's not an issue.
The amount of heat turns out in reality to be the equivalent of about 2 hours of additional sunlight over the course of a year.
Cornell's system went into operation 4 years ago. The city of Toronto recently built a modified version of the Cornell system, and it's now using water from the depths of Lake Ontario to cool 100 office buildings downtown. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Kathy, I'm lost, I said, though I knew she was sleeping.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. We're talking with Bev Harris of blackboxvoting.org. Bev has instituted probably one of the largest Freedom of Information Act lawsuits in the history of the United States. Every state asking for the information about the black box votes, these paperless trail voting machines, and what were the logs, what did they say, and why were the results so different from the exit polls. And if you want to learn more about that, or if you want to contribute to her efforts, and Bev's a friend of mine. Bev is not some wealthy person here. Bev is kind of a one-person crusader here, living out there in Seattle. And if you want to contribute to her effort, go to blackboxvoting.org. And welcome back, Bev.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, I just have to give you that plug. I think what you're doing is marvelous. Just like, Shelby at radiopower.org, also streaming us around the planet. Another great entrepreneur who's trying to make these things work and doing it on a shoestring. There's so many good sources out there. Let's take
good people in this country, aren't there?
Yeah, there absolutely are. Let's bring in Derek from Grand Rapids to get his thoughts. Hey, Derek, welcome to the show.
Lars, I just had a comment about, or a question for you on a comment you made a little while ago regarding the Democrats just sitting back idly expecting Bush to shoot himself in the foot. For months, we heard this was the largest get-out-the-vote campaign in history. We had more feet on the ground than anything. And now today it fails, yesterday it fails, and the thought is apparently we sat idly.
Well, number one, according to Bev, it didn't fail. It succeeded wildly. It's just that the voting machine numbers got changed. Right, Bev?
We have to keep remembering there can be a couple of options. It's not always one thing. And always when you're looking at this, don't assume that we screwed up. Yeah. Assume there could have been a situation where we had, a few people manipulating the data that's going through the modem.
Yeah. I mean, why did the Republicans, Derek, thanks for the call, why did the Republicans fight so hard to keep Rush Holt's bill from coming to the floor of the House where it could be voted on that would have required the voting machines in Florida to produce a paper trail?
Yes, and not only that,
for a year
but
and a half.
Rush Holt's bill would have required disconnecting the modems. You see, the modems, you disconnect the modems, you have to get at the machines with inside access, and that's much harder.
And these machines all had modems on them. So
no, but a large percentage.
Large percentage of them did, so people could have dialed into them. Okay, we've been talking with Bev Harris. We'll continue the conversation after the news. Or I'll continue my conversation with our callers. I know Bev has got other things to do and other shows to be on. Bev, thanks so much for being with us. Blackboxvoting.org, right?
Thank you so much, Tom.
Okay, do good, Bev. I truly appreciate all the great work you're doing. Keep it up.
I appreciate what you've been doing. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting, and the occasional conspiracy theory when maybe there really is some hanky-panky going on. Could be.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Working people, many of them lifelong voters, arrived at the polls yesterday to find their legitimacy challenged. All day, reports of voter intimidation and fraud from across the country flowed into the offices of Common Cause, an organization set up to increase voter oversight. For example, in Racine, Wisconsin, a working class and minority area, there were reports that anyone who arrived at the polls without a picture ID found themselves challenged. Professor Spencer Overton, a law professor and Common Cause board member, gave the example of a woman who was challenged in Ohio.
Ohio Republicans also challenged Mary Sullivan, who's a 57-year-old African-American woman who's been voting legitimately for decades. Essentially, she lost her job as a receptionist last year. She was evicted from her apartment when money ran out, and she moved into a homeless shelter. So her name came up with an insufficient address, and she was challenged.
Overton added that high-level voter fraud is actually uncommon. Most voter fraud comes from low-level workers who are paid a dollar per registration, so they make up fake names to pad their wallets.
Sometimes a few bad apples pad their wallets by inventing registrations for Mary Poppins and other fictional purposes. Now, that is a problem, but it's a problem primarily for voter registration organizations that waste money to register and encourage fake people to vote.
For the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, this election was one battle in a war to forge a progressive coalition that includes labor but also brings in other forces. Wisconsin SEIU Political Director Robert Craig.
What we're hoping, and this is what SEIU has been striving for, is to make this not just about winning one election but about the revival of a progressive movement. And that means working with all of our progressive allies, with the environmental community, with women's organizations, with organizations that advocate for all people. And so, quite frankly, we can't do it alone. So SEIU doesn't want to just work as a labor union or with other labor unions. And America Coming Together and America Vote, some of the other 527s have been developed in this election cycle, are true coalitions that involve all of the major sources of possible power within the broader progressive coalition.
Craig told Workers Independent News last night that a political push for health care reform was launched during the campaign.
The idea is that this election isn't the end of something, it's the beginning of something. We want to win this election, then we want to get real health care reform, and the campaign begins tonight. In fact, we have an ad running on CNN on health care reform. We're trying to connect very clearly the electoral work that our members are doing with the ultimate goal, and the goal and the most significant crisis facing working families right now is the health care crisis.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Is there no uptick in the economy to bring us cheer? Wages are stagnant, jobs are down, stock prices are in the ditch, corporate profits are sliding. But wait, here it is. Just when you thought nothing was on the rise, here's an economic indicator soaring up, up, and away. It's the pay of CEOs. Even if a company's stock plummets, its workers are fired, and its accountants are under federal investigation for cooking the books and looting the pension fund, the boss hog is still wallowing in the big bucks, now taking an average of more than $11 million a year in personal pay. Well, the boss's oink, we deserve it. Besides, we're just being paid what the market will bear. It's how capitalism works, so get over it. But hold it right there, bucko. Doesn't capitalism now operate in a global market? Haven't you been telling us that you don't have to pay fair wages to American workers because you can roam the global labor market and get workers for, say, 13 cents an hour in China, or even import skilled software engineers from, say, India to work for a third of the pay of U.S. workers? Yes, you have. So here's my plan. Let's import CEOs. We can get them a whole lot cheaper from abroad and get good ones, too. Did you know that the top bosses of major corporations in Europe, Japan, Latin America, and elsewhere are delighted to do CEO work for only $1 million or $2 million a year? American corporate bosses now are hauling away about 500 times the pay of a typical worker in their corporations. Not exactly a plus for company morale. But the ethic in other countries is much more fair. Bosses in Mexico, for example, are paid only 45 times what the typical worker makes. In England, it's 25 times. In Japan, it's only 10 times. This is Jim Hightower saying, so come on, you boards of directors. Start thinking out of the box and applying a little global competition to the executive suite. Isn't that how capitalism works?
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too. But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. A Dutch study at Wageningen University and Leiden University Medical Center indicates that if you have a positive mental outlook, you'll live longer. Optimists are 77% less likely to die of a heart attack, stroke, or other cardiovascular causes than the most pessimistic group. So not only is it, I just think wise politics to try to find the lemonade that we can make out of this lemon. How can we use this How can we use this as a positive force? John Kerry, even as we speak, making his concession speech, apparently he sat down with all the mathematicians and the Democrats and the Republicans and everybody else, and they said, is there any way, even if all of these provisional ballots came our way, everything else, given the fact that, of course, you can't recount the electronic voting machines, is there any way that he can claim a victory? And the answer apparently was no. They have it in the bag, and so he's given it up, and Bush is going to have four more years, sure enough. And how can we use this in a positive way? And I see so many potential ways. First of all, it's time to begin holding Bush accountable. He can no longer say, oh, well, Clinton, you know, it's all Clinton's fault. It's time to start holding Bush accountable, number one. Number two, the chickens are going to come home to roost. The front page story in the Wall Street Journal today. You know, look at what's going on with the economy. We have a half of a $1 trillion trade deficit, a half a $1 trillion internal debt deficit this year, $7 trillion debt. We're sucking up 79% of the world's credit. It's unsustainable. We are behaving like a couple of irresponsible newlywed teenagers who got a hold of a whole bunch of credit cards in the mail and are just, you know, going to town. I'm sorry if that's a stereotype that offends you, but unfortunately I've not nobody in my family, but I've seen more than a few of these kinds of things, and you know, if I mean, you grow up, you see this in people, our country can't do this. We cannot be so fiscally irresponsible, so financially irresponsible, to load our children with this debt. We can't sustain $2 billion a week in a war in Iraq when Iraq represented no threat to us whatsoever and had nothing to do with 9/11. We can't continue to have a media that is so dysfunctional and misinformed that 72% of Bush voters actually thought that Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11. I mean, these should be giant red flags, and my hope and my belief is that this is a wake up call, the wake up call of all wake up calls, that is going to bring about some change in the United States. Let's go back to the phone lines here, 1-866-889-8894. Let's hear from the world. Mike in Orlando, Florida. Mike, your thoughts on all this?
Hey Tom, if I could have a few minutes. I guess we saw they'll stop at nothing from the coup takeover back in 2000 to being a passive participant, in my view, in 9/11. And I think right now the only one that's going to really fight them and bring them down is the ones that really they're putting the blame on, and the only ones that can fight like them, which is the intelligence community. I think they can fight back and eventually, little by little, expose them for what they are, because I don't really think they appreciate what's going on.
I think this is why they put Porter Goss in charge of the intelligence community. He is one of the most partisan Republicans around. He voted to slash intelligence funding when John Kerry back in 94, this was the Wolf Ed, you know, Kerry voted to slash intelligence by $6 billion. Porter Goss wanted to cut it by, that was 3.4%. Porter Goss wanted to cut it by 20%. I mean, you know, they have put the fox in charge of the hen house with regard to intelligence.
I still think that there's enough people in the line of fire down there, though, that, like I said, from the book Imperial Hubris and others, that the intelligence community really isn't happy with the way that they're being used and how the war is being fought on terrorism.
Yeah.
As far as the election's concerned, there's an article in about 3 days before the election, 2002, the governor's election in Florida. And on CNN, it showed that Bill McBride was in a close race with Governor Jeb Bush. Well, McBride ended up losing 56% to 43%, which is not even close.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to the fact that we don't have any other exit polls, I find it hard to believe that with the activism we've had, not just in Florida but throughout the country, that this year versus the 2000 election, the Democrats only gained 547,000 versus what they had in 2000, and
it's not possible, Mike.
923,000.
It's the classic magic trick, you know. If I want you to, if I'm gonna, you know, pull a rabbit out of the hat with my right hand, and I'm in the busy using my left hand to stash that rabbit into the hat, and I don't want you to see it, I'm gonna be doing something real, real conspicuous with my right hand so that you don't notice what my left hand is doing. And I think that there have been a lot of red herrings. There's been a lot of, you know, oh, we got to have these poll challengers. Oh, we've got to have, you know, there's been a lot of stuff that the Republicans have been doing. And a lot of people have been scratching their heads going, why are they drawing attention to the fact that they're trying to suppress the vote? Why are they drawing attention to their dirty tricks? Why are they allowing these phony registrations to happen? You know, why are they allowing all this bad press? Well, because it has taken all of the focus off the electronic voting machines. All of it. There has been none. Other than Lou Dobbs, nobody in the national media has, and Tina Brown, nobody in the national media has even touched this story.
Tom, what really concerns me about this, not so much as the loss, because I really do believe that they're going to bring themselves down. I think what concerns me is how we're going to handle it, because it's pretty devastating when I believe in our heart of hearts that we all knew that we were as active as ever.
Yeah.
And this could be, and this is very devastating.
Yeah,
it's going to be tough for many of us,
yeah,
including.
Well,
myself.
I'm telling you, Mike, don't be demoralized. It's whether somehow we screwed up or they did brilliantly better than we did. Whether it's that or whether they stole the election, doesn't matter. We have what we have right now, and we can use this to move forward. We can use it to generate enthusiasm, to generate energy, to re-engage the national debate, because they do have an agenda, and they are going to pursue it, and it is going to be discussed, and we are going to be part of that discussion. We cannot roll over and just say, okay, that's it.
I'll let you know. I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing. And
yeah.
I encourage those. I know in the chat room, too, everybody was pretty upset and down about it, but like you said, after a while we can pull ourselves back up and hopefully we can get through this.
We have to. We will. This nation always has in the past. We will do it again. We've all done this as individuals. We've, you know, lost lovers. We've lost friends. We've lost our dogs have died. I mean, we've all been through, you know, grief. We're going to get through this grief, and we're going to make something better out of it. We absolutely must.
Thanks for your time, your show, and your outlook, Tom. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and keep it up, Mike. I appreciate all the good work you're doing. I'm assuming that was Mike Toth, actually. I should have just verified that. Mike does the archives for our program that you can find at tomhartman.com. If that was Mike, my voice sounded awful familiar. And I know Mike is down in Florida there, so that is... Yeah. This is what we have to do. And don't give in to whining, and don't give in to hatred. It's funny. I was doing, you know, this play-by-play yesterday with this local conservative here in Vermont. And he goes, well, you know, the Democrats, there's so much hatred of George Bush among the Democrats. And I said, come on, that's one of Newt Gingrich's words. There's a lot of anger about George W. Bush's policies. And there's a lot of people who think that, you know, he's not perhaps the finest human being. He may be even a sociopath. He might, you know. But frankly, I don't know anybody who really and truly hates him, who has a burning hatred for him. And if they do, I really pity them, because hatred is one of the most corrosive emotions that there is. It's right up there with jealousy and greed. I mean, it is extremely corrosive. We can't give in to that. It's the cheap. I mean, it's so cheap. It's so easy to go to hatred. It's so easy to go to despair. And they are not only not useful, they will destroy you. And so instead, what we have to do is find the energy in this. Let's turn this into something useful. The same way that the founders of this country turned the oppression of George III into a useful emotion and energized the people. This now is the third George to rule the United States. We had George Washington, and this is the second George Bush. We now have our George III, and it's time for the Sons of Liberty to rise up and mount a loyal opposition in a peaceful fashion by raising these issues in a public way and you know, taking back democracy. We simply must. 1-866-889-8894. Matt in New Hampshire. Hey, Matt, welcome to the program. I believe that's Matt in New Hampshire on line 3 there. Apparently, Matt, if you're listening to your radio, We are gone. So we'll try David in San Francisco. No, hang on just a second. Hello? That's not. There's David in San Francisco. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Hear me all right?
I can.
Oh, good. I didn't hear that little click, and that's always the important part. You know, Greg Palast was interviewed on Air America this morning. He makes it very plain that it's the machines.
Yeah.
He apparently wrote an article perhaps a week ago laying out which states were going to be at issue, and he made it very plain. It's Florida, Ohio, and New Mexico that are the ones that when the people were being forced with the voting machines that didn't have paper trails, that these were going to be the states, and then the various aspects of it where the preliminaries where various people were being taken off the, you know, as we saw with the 58,000 absentee ballots that didn't get mailed out or disappeared
right.
in the mail.
Right.
So he's very clear, and I'm really surprised that Kerry is wimping out at this point. You know, apparently he's going to announce defeat when, in fact, it's very clear that he probably did win and won quite handily. One of the issues, even the Associated Press, if you go to Yahoo's just basic front cover page, you'll look in their main news articles. There's a disturbing question that's coming up about the exit polls, and that the exit polls, apparently 4 years ago, the exit polls clearly said that Gore won, and when the results came in, that became an issue. And so the various news services banded together, and they got two different exit polls companies to go about the country, and again, the same problem came in. And how is it that they're with their statistical margin of error and
our exit polls in the United States, David, were just nice and fine from the 1940s when they first started doing serious exit polling, particularly, you know, and through the 50s, particularly after the Dewey One, you know, debacle. They got very good at it. We use that as the gold standard in third world countries when the Carter Center, the United Nations, or other international observers go in and make sure that elections are legitimate. And all of a sudden, in 1996, 1998, and 2000, in those states where there were electronic voting machines, particularly the state of Georgia in the Max Cleland race, all of a sudden the exit polls and the voting machines didn't agree. And here we are again, and it sure smells like fraud to me. David, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S. is a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly.
So that's there's the metaphor. We still, 80% of the American public still believes that health care is a right and we should have national health care. The majority of Americans still understand that taxes are the cost of admission to civil society, that they are an investment, not a burden from which we need relief, but they are an investment in our present and in our future, building our roads, our sewer systems, our bridges, our infrastructure. Taxes are an investment. The vast majority of Americans understand that when George Washington said we should not, you know, squander our youth in wars, in unnecessary wars in foreign lands, that has been the guiding principle virtually all of American history. There have been a few screw-up exceptions, and we particularly Vietnam and now Iraq, and we're getting it. The vast majority of Americans get it. And whether this election was stolen by black box voting machines or whether it was stolen by millions of dollars spent on lies and deceptive ads, doesn't much matter to me. The reality is, right now, we have the potential. We have the potential to really and truly start to make some change in this country. We're right now, interestingly, we're right now where the conservatives were in 1964 when Barry Goldwater was defeated. And what did it do? It brought them together. It energized them. They started pouring money into think tanks. They created a movement. And that movement ended up taking over the United States of America. You see it in action today. And we must do the same. And this program is a part of it. You are a part of it. Every single one of us in our individual actions are a part of it. I'm going to get to Martin Meyer here after the next break. Let's take a few more phone calls. 1-866-889-8894. Kirk in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Kirk, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I was actually scanning through the local channels here in New Mexico last night, and I heard a report that there were phantom votes showing up on these electronic machines here. And they talked about some kind of new software upgrade that they had recently done to these machines, and that there was phantom votes showing up.
Surprise, surprise.
So maybe one of the good things that could come out of this, if some of this is exposed enough, maybe there will be reform to, finally fixing these problems and maybe eliminating these machines, one of these days, or maybe that could be a good thing.
Yeah, I really wish that rather than conceding, Kerry would make this an issue. But frankly, I suspect that he really believes in the system, and he really believes in not distracting the nation when we're in the middle of a crisis, the so-called war on terrorism and all this stuff. And I'm sure he really believes that the best thing to do is to get Iraq finished, to have a president, to have a leader, to have somebody who can be making decisions rather than tie this thing up for months and what right. might end up like another Watergate kind of thing. We could afford Watergate when we weren't at war, and I'm suspecting that's his thinking. I'm not sure I agree with it, but I suspect that that's his thinking. I think it's a very noble way of thinking. We have to do something about these, why on God's earth are we giving our vote to private corporations who are not telling us, who are refusing to give us the source code, who are refusing to show us how their machines work, and who are then telling us how we voted? I mean, this is wrong.
Well, and since there's going to be no paper trail anyway, there's no real way we can prove, what the vote really was, if there is, in fact, fraud going on.
That's the point.
And I guess, the good news is also I kind of feel that with another 4 years of Bush, it's kind of like this, they've been like this Baghdad Bob as far as accountability is concerned.
And later the
forces of accountability are going to show up.
That's exactly right. I read this thing about, 2-3 months ago. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal about the Christmas, the Santa Claus strategy that the Republicans have employed over the last 20, 30 years, where they spend like crazy and then they let the Democrats come in and clean up the damage. They can't do it this time. At least I don't think so. I don't think that, I think within 4 years, it's going to catch up. It's going to bite them on the butt big time. And, America will discover what conservative economics has done to us. Kirk, thanks for the call. 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene. Now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Working people, many of them lifelong voters, arrived at the polls yesterday to find their legitimacy challenged. All day, reports of voter intimidation and fraud from across the country flowed into the offices of Common Cause, an organization set up to increase voter oversight. For example, in Racine, Wisconsin, a working class and minority area, there were reports that anyone who arrived at the polls without a picture ID found themselves challenged. Professor Spencer Overton, a law professor and Common Cause board member, gave the example of a woman who was challenged in Ohio.
Ohio Republicans also challenged Mary Sullivan, who's a 57-year-old African-American woman who's been voting legitimately for decades. Essentially, she lost her job as a receptionist last year. She was evicted from her apartment when money ran out, and she moved into a homeless shelter. So her name came up with an insufficient address, and she was challenged.
Overton added that high-level voter fraud is actually uncommon. Most voter fraud comes from low-level workers who are paid a dollar per registration, so they make up fake names to pad their wallets.
Sometimes a few bad apples pad their wallets by inventing registrations for Mary Poppins and other fictional purposes. Now, that is a problem, but it's a problem primarily for voter registration organizations that waste money to register and encourage fake people to vote.
For the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, this election was one battle in a war to forge a progressive coalition that includes labor but also brings in other forces. Wisconsin SEIU Political Director Robert Craig.
What we're hoping, and this is what SEIU has been striving for, is to make this not just about winning one election, but about the revival of a progressive movement. And that means working with all of our progressive allies, with the environmental community, with women's organizations, with organizations that advocate for all people. And so, quite frankly, we can't do it alone. So SEIU doesn't want to just work as a labor union or with other labor unions. And America Come Together and America Vote, some of the other 527s have been developed in this election cycle, are true coalitions that involve all of the major sources of possible power within the broader progressive coalition.
Craig told Workers Independent News last night that a political push for health care reform was launched during the campaign.
The idea is that this election isn't the end of something, it's the beginning of something. We want to win this election, then we want to get real health care reform, and the campaign begins tonight. In fact, we have an ad running on CNN on health care reform. We're trying to connect very clearly the electoral work that our members are doing with the ultimate goal, and the goal and the most significant crisis facing working families right now is the health care crisis.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. There you go. Okay, 27 minutes before the hour. George Bush has been nasty to us, but it looks like he's going to be president for another 4 years. Scary thing here. We've got John in D.C. sent us a... I just received a photo a Cincinnati poll manager took this evening. It seems to be proof of some fishy actions with ballots in Ohio. Bottom line, note the already voted with ballots in the back of the truck with a Bush-Cheney sticker in the back window. In a nutshell, Stephen Skirts is a poll manager for the Kerry campaign in Cincinnati. His precinct is heavily made up of minorities and students. Well, he goes through this whole thing. Anyhow, basically what they did was they took a bunch of these challenged ballots and stuck them in a truck and hauled them off, and nobody knows where they went. They just seem to have vanished. But frankly, I don't think that that's the biggest problem. I think the biggest problem... I think there's several big problems. We've got a problem with our media. We've got a problem with politicians who lie to us. We've got a problem with an entire party, with an entire political system that believes that it's okay and legitimate for the ends to justify the means, to lie in order to be in a position where they theoretically should be telling truth. This is not democracy. It's not healthy for democracy. Let's take a few more phone calls here. Monica in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Monica, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi. Thank you for, I've actually spoken to you some years ago or whatever, and over the time, but I haven't probably in the last year. But I feel the same as you, and I wanted to thank you for that point of view, because I think, we're all kind of sick and disappointed, but I think in a certain way this will, this had to work itself out, and if Kerry had gotten in... I think the economy is so bad that it would have been blamed on the Democrats again.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I said this on the air a couple of days ago. There's this little part of me, setting aside the damage that I think can be done with the Supreme Court. And that's the thing that truly scares the bejesus out of me. But setting that aside, there was a little part of me that was almost hoping that George Bush would get elected, because he's created such a train wreck, and whoever's president is going to have to deal with it. And whoever's, and is going to ultimately end up probably having to take responsibility for it. And as progressive talk radio grows across the United States, and it is, and it will, and the right-wing echo machine is being seen more and more for what it is, just a front for corporate America and the cons, particularly faux news and Murdoch and his papers and all the right-wing blowhards. Speaking as a left-wing blowhard here, people are going to wake up. People are going to wake up, and ultimately, ironically, oddly, this may be we're going to have to make it a good thing. We're going to have to.
Well, you know, I was in Europe for a month, and I read a lot about it from European newspapers. It was interesting, though, because they were all, you know, scared to death in a way. But what was really interesting, the first taxi driver we met when we got off the airport, when we were talking about polyglot, said, "Oh, I know that Carrie's a flip-flopper."
yeah, they're talking.
It's so simplistic. It's so simplistic, but that's part of it. They put out so much propaganda.
Yeah.
The right wing, you know.
And
now they're gonna. Now it's like this whole system they've created that, you know, it's gonna be a train wreck in a way.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of people, economic people, were saying the American economy is going to collapse, and that may or may not be true to whatever degree it might happen. But they all talked about how leveraged we are, and that's very hard to bring back. And so in a certain way, on Bush's watch, it may very well collapse.
Yeah. And so much has already happened on Bush's watch, and he's been able to blame it on Clinton, but he can't do that anymore. He can't do that anymore.
Yeah, it's only so much he can blame.
There you go.
Monica. The other thing about Kerry, too, you know, I heard this morning on an earlier thing that it would take weeks to establish who the real winner was. And then there's the whole thing about the electronic fraud, which will take more than that, you know.
Yeah.
And I think Kerry's probably wise in saying, I don't want people to blame me for having dragged this out too long.
Yeah, and the Democratic Party. I mean, that could harm the Democratic Party tremendously.
Yeah.
I think,
you know, concede and then say, okay, this is apparently the way it's going to be, but we're going to keep challenging and keep working. And I think that we can, you know, it will galvanize more people, because they're going to see even my neighbors and all the different people who voted for Bush who said, well, you know, and you wouldn't talk about it. They're going to suffer economically.
Yeah. And we need to be working. We need to be working right now, Monica, for the midterm elections. In 2 years, there's going to be another set of elections, and we need to be working on those, and we need to be getting rid of these electronic voting machines, and we need to be holding these people accountable and making these points aggressively. I appreciate your call. Thanks so much for calling. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service, is on. Hey, Victoria, you know, I was at WDEV last night until 1 o'clock in the morning. You kept calling in, and Ken and I were in another room, and Eric wasn't putting us on the air together. I kept wanting to say hi to you. But you were doing a great job of tracking the election last night. You know, what are your thoughts on all this?
Well, you know, it's fascinating that the exit poll said one thing and then the results said such a very, very different thing.
Only in those states with electronic voting machines.
Yeah.
Only in those states where there was no paper trail on the electronic voting machines.
Yeah, I think there are going to be some questions. It may be one of those unanswered, you know, becomes an urban legend of what really went down.
I think all hell is going to be raised. And it's already started. Yeah, Bev Harris, we had Bev Harris on the program last hour, blackboxvoting.org, not .com, .org, blackboxvoting.org. And, you know, and I wrote and broke one of the original stories about Bev's work almost 2 years ago. And Bev has just filed the largest Freedom of Information Act filing in probably the history of the United States. And, you know, she said yesterday she wasn't at all surprised by what happened. And, in fact, she was expecting what happened because she knew what machines were rigged in what states, and she believes she can prove it. So we'll see.
Well, then, do you think that Kerry maybe should not have conceded?
Well, the problem is that he would be ridiculed as a flying saucer, tinfoil on his head, conspiracy theorist. I think it would marginalize him. It would harm the Democratic Party. I think it's probably the best strategy is for this to just, you know, be cleaned up and let it come out in some other way. I it's really hard to second guess. I mean, he's got to have so much more information and know so much more than I do that I'm willing to just trust his judgment right now on this. But where are you and what's the report from where you are?
Well, I'm in a diner in suburban Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C. It's really interesting. There are some very subdued faces, and there are a few gleeful ones, but not that many gleeful ones in this area because it's a fairly Democratic area. It's interesting. I mean, there's a sense of exhaustion, quite honestly. The sense that I get, because I'm hearing that some radio stations have already switched to Christmas music, people are going to spend like bleep.
You think?
People have had it. They are ready to spend money and to move on from this. This has been a year-long hard election.
Yeah.
People are tired, and I think that, that's one of the moods I get. There's also a sense of a kind of incredulity that really, how could this have happened?
Yeah.
How is it possible that so many people have signed on?
Yeah,
to,
I, you know, I got to tell you, you know, last night after, I think your last call into WDEV last night must have been around 12:30 or something like that. Ken and I got off the air at 1 o'clock in the morning. We went around the corner to the bar. It's,
That's understandable.
Give me a gin and tonic now. It's, but,
well, when I left the Democratic Party, or Democratic National Committee Party, I must say people were getting pretty loaded, and you could tell that there were people who hadn't smoked in 10 years who were lighting up.
Yeah, yeah.
It was one of those nights.
I think, though, that this lemon is something that we can make some substantial lemonade out of. I think it's really going to energize people. Yes, maybe people are going to drowse out for a while. They're going to go on spending binges. They're going to, you know, have a drink. They're going to, you know, the Prozac sales are going to go up. Maybe. But I think that this actually could be the foundation for a true, significant, broad-based progressive movement that integrates into the Democratic Party for the first time since the 30s, really. And, you know, I see this as a potentially a very positive thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. I'm hoping you're right, because I think that the president, I already heard Senate Majority Leader Frist say already today that they have a mandate. I think they have a mandate to pursue as strong an agenda as they want to.
Yeah. Well, time will tell. Time will tell. It's you know, it's a shame about losing Tom Daschle too, because he was a good man. I've met him, and
he was a good man. It's very sad.
A genuinely decent human being.
Somebody we needed. Everybody needed.
Yeah, he's one of those few guys in politics that you meet and you get a sense that you're talking to a real person there rather than just a mask. But anyhow, any other news, Victoria?
That's pretty much it.
That's pretty much it. Okay.
As far as I know, the world could have blown up and we wouldn't know.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you get back to what you're doing. Thanks for the call. I do appreciate it.
Thank
you. From Talk Radio News Service. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Nora in Humboldt County, California is on the line. Hey, Nora, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. And thank you for all your good work there, good hard work. I had just read from Reuters at UK that there were 45 million registered voters to cast on the cast their ballot on touchscreen systems.
Right.
So I was wondering, do we have a percentage of e-voting with no paper trail?
You know, frankly, I don't have that number right in front of me. You can get a lot of that information at blackboxvoting.org.
Right. I was trying to get on when Bev Harris was on and see if she had an idea.
Yeah.
'Cause 45 million voters, that's quite a large percentage of...
Yeah, my recollection is it's about a third of Americans this year voted on touchscreen machines, and only in Nevada did they produce a paper receipt.
So only one state had a paper trail.
Yeah.
Out of all of those.
Yeah. And Bev, according to Bev, you know, she was expecting, she implied some kind of inside information that really only in three states were they going to actually rig the machines. And those three states were Florida, Ohio, and New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll see. I mean, she's doing the Freedom of Information Act lawsuits. It might be a year before this stuff comes out. But I have a feeling that there's going to be a really strong groundswell in the United States, particularly if we can get this thing into the mainstream media. I encourage you, Monica. Nora.
Nora.
Nora, right. I encourage you, Nora. I encourage everybody who is listening to be writing letters to the editor of your local newspapers and to call your local media and say, why are the Republicans resisting Rush Holt's bill? Why are they resisting legislative attempts to require a paper trail on these electronic machines? We must have accountable voting in the United States. And for that matter, why are private corporations handling our vote? I mean, these should be owned by and operated by and programmed by and run by civil servants who are fully accountable to we the people, not some corporation that's only accountable to its stockholders and its board of directors.
Exactly.
And we need to absolutely raise hell about this.
Well, here's a little bit of good news.
Yeah.
For looking in the next 4 years, 4 years from now, my daughter's high school voted, and 72% came out for Kerry.
There you go. See, that's another one of those polls. I mean, I am convinced that Bev is right, that Kerry actually won by a landslide, and that it got lost, let's say, in the electronic voting machines. But, you know, we probably will never know. What we have to do is get this cancer out of our electoral system, these electronic voting machines. Nora, thanks so much for the call. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Joe in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I'm in total agreement with you. I think that, you know, I don't want to be Pollyanna, but I think this is maybe one of the best things that's ever happened to us in American history.
Yeah.
The possibilities here, I'm reminded that the Chinese glyph for opportunity is the same one as their glyph for chaos.
Yeah, for crisis.
Crisis, that's it.
Yeah.
That was it. I knew chaos. And the other thing is that while I'm not advocating violence, I think I have a slogan for us. Back in the 30s in Franco Spain, the non-Franco, the anti-fascist people, had a spokeswoman whose radio name was La Passionaria.
Mm-hmm.
And her rallying cry was, it is better to die on our feet than live on our knees.
That's
she
a,
also
that's a
said
one.
It's better to be the widow of a hero than the wife of a coward.
Yeah, yeah. That's
like I said, I'm not advocating violence, but we need to start thinking, I think, a little more revolutionary than we have, and get active.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm convinced people will be, and that we're going to be. I don't think, you know, those are great quotes. I think, though, that for maximum effectiveness, we should simply reach back into our own history. There's no shortage of great quotes from the American, you know, give me liberty or give me death. I mean, as a beginning point.
Exactly.
You know, in our own traditions here in the United States.
I was just trying to find a woman to quote.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, there are many. I mean, Susan B. Anthony, who was a great American socialist, you know, she had some remarkable things to say.
But I think we're going to find this is actually a really good thing to have happened.
Yeah. If we choose to make it.
If we choose to make it that way, Joe,
it's in our hands. We can choose to wallow in this. We can whine and scream and yell and call names.
Like a 2-year-old throwing a tantrum on the floor.
Or we can do something productive.
I hope that's the choice people make.
Well, it's not just people. It's you and me. We all have a stake in this. And
absolutely.
So, Joe, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. And thank you for listening there in KTRC. 1-866-889-8894. Yawn in Eureka, California?
Yeah, hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Hi, Yawn.
Hey, I just have a couple of quick questions for you. The first is, if it becomes known and widely publicized that there had indeed been some sort of fraud going on with these machines, what do you think would be the effect of that? Do you think there might be even like some sort of movement for impeachment? And the second question is, if it doesn't come out, what do you think we can do, and what do you think the possibilities are of us getting rid of these machines in our voting system?
Yeah, well, the answer to your first question is I just don't know. It's going to depend on how it happens, and it's going to depend on how complicit the media is, the large corporate media is in all this. And that's a very real concern of mine, is that you've got, for example, NBC is owned by one of the largest defense contractors in the world. You know, spooky stuff. In terms of getting rid of the voting machines, though, I think that if this issue gets raised, even in the blogosphere, I mean, even in cyberspace, significantly, sufficiently, that pressure can be brought to bear, like it was in the state of Nevada, like it was in the state of California, to either get rid of the machines or get them at least to have a paper trail. I think we should also get corporations out of the voting process. And I think it's possible. I think it's possible. Yawn, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour. Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research is responsible for the following message. It was not approved by any candidate nor by any candidate's committee.
Hello, my name is Cindy and I am a progressive. For many years I've supported Ralph Nader, always admiring his many accomplishments. However, at this critical time I cannot support his candidacy. You see, I have Parkinson's disease and embryonic stem cell research may one day save my life. George W. Bush has severely restricted funding for stem cell research. He also threatens to jail doctors and scientists who want to use nuclear transfer research to cure debilitating diseases. On the other hand, John Kerry vows to remove President Bush's restrictions and to openly fund this vital research. Ralph Nader recently admitted that he has no chance to win this presidential election. A vote for Nader can only be a vote for Bush. Please don't throw your vote away. My life depends on it. Thank you.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A recent report released by the Sierra Club, the United Steelworkers, SEIU, Unite Here, and others reveals clean energy policies would create at least a million new jobs in the United States.
Clean energy policies will create 1.4 million new jobs nationwide once the policies are implemented. These are policies for clean cars and clean energy.
Dan Becker, director of the Global Warming Program at the Sierra Club.
What the study did was it looked at what happens when we save energy. When you have a car that uses less gas, you're saving money on the gasoline. When you have refrigerators and light bulbs and other appliances that use less electricity, you're saving money on electricity. Rather than exporting that money to the Persian Gulf for oil or out of state to an electric utility, you get to spend that money on something else.
The report found that American households would save more than $1,000 annually by 2025. And Becker says increased consumer buying power helps all workers by creating jobs.
I think it became very clear that manufacturing jobs were being eroded not by environmental regulation in the United States, but by faulty trade agreements.
David Foster, District 11 Director for the United Steelworkers, sees a shift in the way union members view the environment.
We lost 3,500 steelworker jobs in the state of Minnesota. Every single one of them was lost because of trade agreements. Not a one of them was lost because of American environmental regulation.
In addition to increased jobs, Becker says clean energy policies would reduce global warming and protect the quality of our air, drinking water, and food.
No one knows better than workers that we need a clean environment. And the good news from this study is that we can have a clean environment and more jobs, that the two go hand in hand. And that's good for all of us.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, baby, baby.
no, you've got to get active. You have to participate. We have to participate. Right now, today, tomorrow, every day, we can't give this up. We can't give this up. We have to hold this nation in our thoughts and our prayers and in our work. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, and let's see, who's here? Mike and... Oh, no, wait a minute. That's trying to track these back here. My board is a little confused. Carrie in Santa Fe, is that right?
Yes.
Hey, Carrie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for being about the brightest part of my day today. I had the privilege of helping two people that had never voted before vote yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched the elections last night until we couldn't watch them anymore and got up early this morning to see what had happened, basically, and my friend's first thought was, we were talking about how it had to have been rigged. There's no way that the exit polls could be so much different than the actual popular vote. And her first thought to me was, if that's the way it's always going to be, why do we even bother?
Right, and that's why it can't be that's the way it's always going to be. We've got to get active, and we've got to do something about this.
What exactly is it that we can do as individuals?
Well, first of all, this, you know, just like with abolition, just like with suffrage movement, just like with the anti-war movement, just like with the civil rights movement, the first thing we have to do is wake up a certain critical mass of people. And the way you do that is you talk to everybody you know about, you know, electronic voting machines, and also about just the basic principles, the core concepts, you know, liberal concepts of you know, health care and a minimum wage and unionization, the things that will return the middle class to the United States. Secondly, write letters to the editor of the newspaper. One of the major forces, a lot of people don't realize this, one of the major forces that brought about the American Revolution wasn't the shot heard around the world at Concord, the Boston Massacre, or the Boston Tea Party. It was committees of correspondence. It was mostly women who got together and coordinated letters to the editor of newspapers that they placed in newspapers all over the United States and in England as well. There was actually a strong opposition in England to the UK. And we need to recreate these committees of correspondence, and not just with your local newspaper. I mean, also, you know, blog sites, websites, message boards. Get out there. The cons are actually paying people. I have a message board on TomHartmann.com, and there's a guy on there who's actually being paid by one of the conservative think tanks to rant at people. I mean, I've tried to block, you know, that's a whole other story, but they're actually out there. We have to get out there and get active and
Thank
spread
you,
the word. That's what we need to be doing. Thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it, Carrie. Boy, what a day. Boy, what a day. But it really and truly can be dawn in America. Dawn over darkness, yeah, but dawn in America. Much we can do.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Check our website at www.tomhartmann.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's
888-242. Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Working people, many of them lifelong voters, arrived at the polls yesterday to find their legitimacy challenged. All day, reports of voter intimidation and fraud from across the country flowed into the offices of Common Cause, an organization set up to increase voter oversight. For example, in Racine, Wisconsin, a working-class and minority area, there were reports that anyone who arrived at the polls without a picture ID found themselves challenged. Professor Spencer Overton, a law professor and Common Cause board member, gave the example of a woman who was challenged in Ohio.
Ohio Republicans also challenged Mary Sullivan, who's a 57-year-old African-American woman who's been voting legitimately for decades. Essentially, she lost her job as a receptionist last year. She was evicted from her apartment when money ran out, and she moved into a homeless shelter. So her name came up with an insufficient address, and she was challenged.
Overton added that high-level voter fraud is actually uncommon. Most voter fraud comes from low-level workers who are paid a dollar per registration, so they make up fake names to pad their wallets.
Sometimes a few bad apples pad their wallets by inventing registrations for Mary Poppins and other fictional purposes. Now, that is a problem, but it's a problem primarily for voter registration organizations that waste money to register and encourage fake people to vote.
For the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, this election was one battle in a war to forge a progressive coalition that includes labor but also brings in other forces. Wisconsin SEIU Political Director Robert Craig.
What we're hoping, and this is what SEIU has been striving for, is to make this not just about winning one election but about the revival of a progressive movement. And that means working with all of our progressive allies, with the environmental community, with women's organizations, with organizations that advocate for all people. And so, quite frankly, we can't do it alone. So SEIU doesn't want to just work as a labor union or with other labor unions. And America Come Together and America Vote, some of the other 527s have been developed in this election cycle, are true coalitions that involve all of the major sources of possible power within the broader progressive coalition.
Craig told Workers Independent News last night that a political push for health care reform was launched during the campaign.
The idea is that this election isn't the end of something, it's the beginning of something. We want to win this election, and we want to get real health care reform, and the campaign begins tonight. In fact, we have an ad running on CNN on health care reform. We're trying to connect very clearly the electoral work that our members are doing with the ultimate goal, and the goal and the most significant crisis facing working families right now is the health care crisis.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Is there no uptick in the economy to bring us cheer? Wages are stagnant, jobs are down, stock prices are in the ditch, corporate profits are sliding. But wait, here it is. Just when you thought nothing was on the rise, here's an economic indicator soaring up, up, and away. It's the pay of CEOs. Even if a company's stock plummets, its workers are fired, and its accountants are under federal investigation for cooking the books and looting the pension fund, the boss hog is still wallowing in the big bucks, now taking an average of more than $11 million a year in personal pay. Well, the bosses oink, we deserve it. Besides, we're just being paid what the market will bear. It's how capitalism works, so get over it. But hold it right there, bucko. Doesn't capitalism now operate in a global market? Haven't you been telling us that you don't have to pay fair wages to American workers because you can roam the global labor market and get workers for, say, 13 cents an hour in China, or even import skilled software engineers from, say, India to work for a third of the pay of U.S. workers? Yes, you have. So here's my plan. Let's import CEOs. We can get them a whole lot cheaper from abroad, and get good ones, too. Did you know that the top bosses of major corporations in Europe, Japan, Latin America, and elsewhere are delighted to do CEO work for only $1 million or $2 million a year? American corporate bosses now are hauling away about 500 times the pay of a typical worker in their corporations. Not exactly a plus for company morale. But the ethic in other countries is much more fair. Bosses in Mexico, for example, are paid only 45 times what the typical worker makes. In England, it's 25 times. In Japan, it's only 10 times. This is Jim Hightower saying, so come on, you boards of directors, start thinking out of the box and applying a little global competition to the executive suite. Isn't that how capitalism works?
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too. But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. John Edwards just introduced John Kerry. Echoing the comments that I've been making for the last 2 hours, you can be disappointed, but you can't walk away, he said. This fight has just begun. The fight continues. The ideals are still there, and they're still real. Whether John Kerry's victory that was shown by the exit polls in those states that have electronic voting machines, that seems to have evaporated in electronic voting machines, had something to do with that, or whether it was simply that, he was out-strategized, out-advertised, or whatever, or that somehow the majority of Americans, even though they, polls show 80% of people want national health care, want, some sort of good health care programs, that the majority of people don't want Social Security privatized or tinkered with. The majority of people would prefer that our air be actually clean rather than having clear skies initiatives that make the air dirtier. The majority of people would like to have the mercury out of our fish, even, as actually Clinton had put into law, a law that Bush undid, right on down the line. With the possible exception of the majority of Americans not being ready to accept gay marriage, which the Republicans very successfully and very cynically got on the ballots in 11 states to draw out the paranoids, let's say. But regardless of how or why this happened, we have to pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and keep on going. There's an old story. I remember an old story years ago. When I was a teenager, I read this thing. It was written by a guy named Paramahansa Yogananda in his autobiography. And he talked about how two men were walking along a dirt road in India, and they tripped. Both of them tripped in a little gully in the road that they hadn't seen and fell into the dirt. And the first guy reaches over and grabs a stick and starts pounding himself on the head with the stick, going, with the switch, going, "Oh, you idiot, how could you have fallen in the mud? Look at that, you look like an idiot, how could you have done that?" And the other guy got up and dusted himself off and kept walking. Those are our choices. It's very straightforward. And I intend to get up and keep walking, because there is a huge unfinished job done here ahead of us in the United States right now. And there are tremendous needs in this country, and George W. Bush has created an absolute train wreck, and in a way, it's almost like divine karma. It's almost ironic that he is now going to have to deal over the next 4 years with the disaster that he created, and he won't be able to do the Santa Claus strategy that the Wall Street Journal talked about a few months ago, where the Republicans set up these train wrecks, like Ronald Reagan borrowing trillions of dollars which this year we're spending $160 billion just on the interest that Ronald Reagan borrowed so he could make it look like there were economic good times to get himself reelected in 84. The Republicans can't pursue the Santa Claus strategy of disastrous economic policies, sucking the country dry, transferring wealth to the rich, and then letting the Democrats come in like Bill Clinton did and clean up the mess, or like Jimmy Carter did, and clean up the mess from the disastrous Republican policies, conservative policies, I should say. And Bush is going to have to, you know, he's going to have to deal with this mess he's made. Let's take a few phone calls. I think people want to get this stuff off their chests, you know, out of their hearts, work through it, as it were. And we can leave the deeper, more esoteric, perhaps deeper stuff to tomorrow. But the phone lines have just been lit up solid all day, and I don't want to ignore that. Our number 1-866-889-8894. By the way, our chat room seems to be down. I'm not sure what's going on with CompuServe. There had been talk about a software upgrade. Their timing couldn't have been worse. We'll find out. But in any case, our toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894, and Juggler in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Juggler, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you, Tom?
I'm great. As I've been saying now for 2 hours, I see this as, you know, it's a lemon and we can make lemonade out of it. It is something that we can turn into a positive. And in fact, it may well be the very best thing that could have happened because it's going to energize and create a progressive movement. It's going to cause the Democratic Party to have to take stock and recalculate and recalibrate. The unfortunate loss of Tom Daschle may even be a good thing. He was a good and decent human being, but hopefully a true transformation is going to happen. Progressives, Greens, and Democrats in this country will come together and recognize that there is a real threat to America. That threat is called fascism or conservatism or corporatism. The idea that only the rich and only the corporations should be making the rules and writing the laws, and it's a threat to American democracy, and that it must be answered.
Well, here's the good news.
Yes, sir.
We have 4 years to regime change.
The bad news is,
if we came that close to electing a lying traitor, I predict in 4 years we'll elect a scheming socialist.
Yeah.
Hillary.
Yeah, I'm not going to go there. Talk to me in a year or two about that. But frankly, I think, though, that what we need to be doing right now is preparing for the midterms. In 2 years, there's going to be another election, and there's going to be an opportunity to take back the Congress and perhaps even the Senate. And I think we need to be planning on that because, you know, unfortunately, the thing that Bush has done is he's immunized himself against any investigations. Nobody's going to investigate his you know, all the lies and crimes that he's committed because the Republicans control both the House and Senate. And if that can be flipped, then Bush might go down the way Nixon did. And I think I'm not sure how great a thing that would be for the country, but it would sure satisfy me.
Now,
Juggler,
Tom,
yeah.
I agree with you on the electronic voting machines. I don't like them myself. But I also have another question. Why are the Democrats in New Mexico blocking requiring showing an ID when you vote? I mean, I actually showed them my ID when I went in to vote.
Yeah.
And they said, thank you very much, and I wish that we had to require everyone to do that. That was the poll workers saying.
Yeah, yeah.
We have so many illegal aliens here that are voting.
Well, frankly, I doubt it. You know, I really doubt it. I think illegal aliens go out of their way to keep a low profile. They're not going to show up in a polling place. And this is the paranoia of the right. This is the old magic trick. You know, get people all hysterical and worked up. I mean, the illegal aliens represent a real problem in the United States. And the biggest part of the problem is the jobs that they're taking.
Why would they be blocking that requirement?
Well, it's not a requirement. There is no law that says that you have to show ID. In fact, back in the old days,
Republicans here are trying to make it a requirement.
Oh, I know they're trying to make it a requirement. But you know, see, we used to have these things. They were called Jim Crow laws. We had literacy tests. We had the history of American voting has been really rather sordid. You know, are you white? Are you male? Do you own property? Do you have wealth over a certain level? Different states have had different thresholds over the years. We had literacy tests in the South that were designed to, you know, written in such a way that, they were designed to disenfranchise blacks. There has been a long history of using tests or hurdles to jump over. And I think this doing away with these, actually by the Supreme Court, you know, striking them down, was in part a reaction to that. Frankly, I don't have a problem. And I think probably most Democrats don't have a problem with
you in New Mexico.
You know, with
they block it at every turn.
With some sort of rational can you just, you know, demonstrate who you are? The problem where it becomes a problem is where you then get into a situation where you've got, for example, my mother does not have a driver's license. What should she bring?
A Social Security card or some other form.
That doesn't have her picture on it.
She can get any kind of, any form of ID.
She has no photo ID.
She can get one at the motor vehicle place.
So you want her to do that before she comes to vote?
If she doesn't have other ID. I mean, how many other people don't have ID? Maybe. Well, 1% of the population doesn't have an ID?
I don't know, but if we're talking about disenfranchising 1%, I think that that's a significant thing. And probably, you know, my mom is a bad example.
They have the opportunity to get an ID.
Yeah, yeah.
Anybody can get an ID.
Well, you know, it's a legitimate discussion, Juggler. I don't think that it's one of the great issues of our time, but it's a legitimate discussion. I think, though, that we can't allow these, frankly, small issues to divert us from the much larger issues of the potential of the absolute theft of our vote by electronic voting machines, which is a far more real problem, I think. Mike in Utica, you know, in New York, on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thank God for your voice of reason. Makes a loss a little easier to take, you know. But anyway, I think maybe we need to bring back the literacy test. I mean, the problem is the ignorant electorate south of the Mason-Dixon line. They think George Bush is conservative, and he's not. I mean, these ignoramuses would rather pay $10 for a gallon of gas rather than vote for a Catholic from the north. You know, I mean, the thing is, a perfect example of this ignorant electorate is Jim Bunning. I mean, here's a guy who called his opponent Saddam Hussein. He looks like Saddam Hussein's son, and he said to the people, how can you vote for Saddam Hussein's son? And he was reading from a teleprompter during a debate. I mean, this is the ignorance that we elect. And then, of course, there's the other neo-Nazi from Oklahoma who wants to destroy all gays. You know, this is what they're trying to do. They're trying to move us towards a neo-Nazi society. You know,
Mike, I don't disagree with your final point, at least a neo-fascist society. But I think that there's a larger issue at play here, and it's not that people are stupid. It's that advertising works. There's a reason why corporations spend billions of dollars on advertising. And the reason why is because it can change people's minds. It can form opinion. It can change opinions. And the problem, the cancer that I see, is not that we have a bunch of stupid Americans. Because I don't think we do. I think we've got a lot of people who are very busy and they don't pay a whole lot of attention to this stuff. They think of it as, you know, the annual sporting event or the quadriannual sporting event and pay attention the last couple of weeks. But there is so much money. And the primary way that people are getting their information about who the candidates are through television advertisements. And I think they should be banned. I think it should just be plain old, flat out, we should simply say you cannot advertise on television or radio. And if you want to have a license to use the nation's airwaves or the infrastructure in the nation's cable system, for that matter, you have to provide a venue for debates by the candidates. And that, I think, would solve the problem. I don't think it's stupid people. I think it's people made, we could use your word stupid, by advertising. It's the same way that people will buy products that aren't good for them or useful for them or helpful for them. Look at the epidemic of obesity in America today. You can track back in large part to food habits that have to do with advertising. It's the power of advertising.
I think you're right, Tom, but I mean, I think a lot of these.
Let's not blame the victims, Mike.
Well, I know some of these people south of the Mason-Dixon line are still Civil War mentality, you know. And I think the good news in 2008 is that Giuliani hasn't got a prayer, because not only is he a Catholic from the North, he's also Italian.
Yeah. Well, let's hope Giuliani hasn't got a prayer. I was absolutely horrified to hear the absolute out and out blatant lies that Giuliani was telling in the last 4 or 5 days before this, before the election. I mean, he went over the top in my mind. It was tragic. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It was a slow day, and the sun was beating on the soldiers by the side of the road.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The stages of loss, denial, bargaining, anger, despair, and acceptance. And, you know, there's a lot of folks still in denial. Could it have happened? Could it not have happened? It must have been the electronic voting machines stole it. Well, frankly, you know, this that's for me an open question. And I'm not even in denial. I'm already to acceptance. And then the bargaining and the anger, and I know a lot of people are very angry about this, and then the despair. But we have to get through that. We just have to get through it. We have to pick ourselves up and just keep on moving down this road. If we don't, we have lost an extraordinary opportunity. Every day that goes by is another opportunity to change the world in a positive way. And you can participate in that process. Kate in Arcata, California on the line, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Hey, Kate, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I really appreciate your putting that positive message out, because I was feeling pretty depressed too, but really those are just emotions, and I think the power of positive intention is really important to keep in mind. One of the positives that I see about this whole thing happening over the last 4 years has been that people like you are on the radio now. The incredible amount of research and books and all sorts of websites, et cetera, that makes what's going on more obvious to people. I think it's really important that you're pointing out that we take the long view, and that we need, I also think we need people like you to help us look at the long view. And I think you've been doing a really good job of that. I really think it's important that we look at what it is that is the Achilles heel of, say, the liberal or progressive movement, or the people of like mind. And I think one of them you've really brilliantly pointed out today is that, you know, we get thrown a bone, the magic tricks. Here, dogs, pick on this bone. We need to look at ourselves to see where we're being we need to take a closer look at how we're being, our attention is being diverted.
Yeah.
So that we don't fall into the trap over and over again of letting them throw us a bone, and then we all run after the bone.
Well, here's the other problem, Kate. Jack Forbes is a professor of Native American Studies at the University of California at, I forget where it is. Anyhow, I went out and interviewed him back about 8 or 9 years ago when I was writing The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. And he told me the story of a Native American word that is pronounced Wetiko. And he said, he's Native American. He says, we refer to you Europeans as being infected with Wetiko, or as having Wetiko. And I said, what's that? And he said, it means the illness of being a cannibal. Hmm. And I said, you know, what is this? And he says, it's a mental illness. It's a cultural, a contagious cultural mental illness where people try to eat the lives of others. They don't actually eat the others. They eat their lives. They take their belongings. They take their possessions. They take their land. They try to make them into slaves. He said, you guys brought this illness with you from Europe, and we were faced, when you confronted us on our shores, we were faced with three choices. We were faced with the choice of, number one, running away from you, and many of us did. He said we were faced with the choice, number two, of confronting you and dying, and many of us did. In fact, most of us did, he said. And he said, or we were faced with the third choice, and that was of becoming infected with Wetiko and combating you on your own terms. And he said, and some of us did that and paid a terrible price and have lost our heritage as a consequence of it. And I think that, oddly enough, and in fact, I've been meaning to write an op-ed piece about this for some time, progressives are confronted now with those same three choices that the Native Americans were confronted with when Europeans came over. And do we want to become the enemy? I don't think so. Do we want to be rolled over and crushed? That's been what's been happening. I don't think we can allow that. Do we want to run? There's no place to run. So there has to be a fourth option. And the fourth option is the one that the Native Americans were not successful in doing, but I think that we will have the potential of doing, and that is holding up a higher ideal. Awakening people to the reality of the situation and saying there is a higher ideal here. We can create a better world. We can create a society in which life, liberty, and yes, even the pursuit of happiness are the ideals of our society and our culture. And here's how to do it. And we can just lay that out. I believe that this is a very real possibility. And not just that, but that we have to do that. That's our obligation. 29 minutes past the hour. Thanks, Kate, for your kind words.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Working people, many of them lifelong voters, arrived at the polls yesterday to find their legitimacy challenged. All day, reports of voter intimidation and fraud from across the country flowed into the offices of Common Cause, an organization set up to increase voter oversight. For example, in Racine, Wisconsin, a working class and minority area, there were reports that anyone who arrived at the polls without a picture ID found themselves challenged. Professor Spencer Overton, a law professor and Common Cause board member, gave the example of a woman who was challenged in Ohio.
Ohio Republicans also challenged Mary Sullivan, who's a 57-year-old African-American woman who's been voting legitimately for decades. Essentially, she lost her job as a receptionist last year. She was evicted from her apartment when money ran out, and she moved into a homeless shelter. So her name came up with an insufficient address, and she was challenged.
Overton added that high-level voter fraud is actually uncommon. Most voter fraud comes from low-level workers who are paid a dollar per registration, so they make up fake names to pad their wallets.
Sometimes a few bad apples pad their wallets by inventing registrations for Mary Poppins and other fictional purposes. Now, that is a problem, but it's a problem primarily for voter registration organizations that waste money to register and encourage fake people to vote.
For the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, this election was one battle in a war to forge a progressive coalition that includes labor but also brings in other forces. Wisconsin SEIU political director Robert Craig.
What we're hoping, and this is what SEIU has been striving for, is to make this not just about winning one election but about the revival of a progressive movement. And that means working with all of our progressive allies, with the environmental community, with women's organizations, with organizations that advocate for all people. And so, quite frankly, we can't do it alone. So SEIU doesn't want to just work as a labor union or with other labor unions. And America Come Together and America Vote, some of the other 527s have been developed in this election cycle, are true coalitions that involve all of the major sources of possible power within the broader progressive coalition.
Craig told Workers Independent News last night that a political push for health care reform was launched during the campaign.
The idea is that this election isn't the end of something, it's the beginning of something. We want to win this election, then we want to get real health care reform, and the campaign begins tonight. In fact, we have an ad running on CNN on health care reform. We're trying to connect very clearly the electoral work that our members are doing with the ultimate goal, and the goal and the most significant crisis facing working families right now is the health care crisis.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Come together right now over me.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before I playing off the bumper music is kind of an old DJ thing, but we really do have to come together. I mean, this is the time. John Kerry's talking about national unity and about bipartisanship and all that sort of stuff in his concession speech, very gracious concession speech that he just gave. And it's time to take names and hold people accountable and start articulating the clear differences, the clear differences in vision in ways that are truthful. This campaign has been characterized on the Republican side, and cons listening may say, "Oh, this is sour grapes," but I, you know, call me and point out to me a lie in any of the Democratic ads. I've been looking. I don't know of any. There was an exaggeration. We had spent $120 billion or $200 billion in Iraq when actually we'd only spent $120. $200 billion had been allocated. We had lost 1.6 million private sector jobs, not just jobs. But not a specific lie, not an out-and-out lie like in the Wolf ad where they said, after the first terrorist attack on America, John Kerry voted to slash intelligence, would have cut it to the bone. Well, it would have been a 3% cut, and the bombing they were talking about, which was intended to imply 9/11, actually happened more than a decade ago. It was the truck bombing in the basement of the World Trade Center. Just as one example of a deceptive ad. I mean, it's just these. But here, you know, this Tom sour grapes. Yeah. Okay. I am. There is still a little bit of that. You know, the stages of loss. There's still a little bit of denial, bargaining, anger, and despair. But I tell you, I'm pretty much there to acceptance because we have to go forward. Canada has now notified Americans. This just published on Reuters 1 hour ago, based Dateline Ottawa. Disgruntled Democrats seeking a safe Canadian haven after President Bush won Tuesday's election should not pack their bags just yet. Canadian officials just went on the record. Any U.S. citizens so fed up with Bush that they want to make a fresh start up north are going to have to stand in line like any other immigrant, a wait that can take up to a year. So you're stuck. We have to work on this thing together. We are all in this together, and we've got to make it work. Let's go to Al in Ashland, Kentucky. Hey, Al, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I am great, but I'll get better.
I tell you, I'm really enjoying the show today.
Thank you.
I mean, you guys are panty-wearing liberals are normally pitiful, but as sore losers, you're extraordinarily pathetic. It's just priceless.
Al, is that really all you've got to say?
That's about it, buddy. That's okay. About what you're worth.
You really don't have any intelligent comment to make,
baby.
You don't have any intelligent comment to make.
You got your panty wearing butt kicked.
You got no intelligent comment to make at all, huh, Al?
You're just
going to do this con, this typical con, rather pathetic routine.
Say, Al,
I'm really disappointed in you. I really have to. Al, are you still there? Al. I just have to say I'm really disappointed in you. I think it's just so sad that Al is gone. Yeah, there we go. I think it's just so sad. I do welcome calls from people who disagree with me. In fact, I always put them to the front of the line. You tell Ira, we don't generally screen calls, but tell Ira you disagree, I'll put you right at the front of the line. But name calling is tragic. It's really tragic. Marion in Nevada on the line. Hey, Marion, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I guess I'm still in anger.
Okay.
I just want to say that it seems to me that people want to believe in their government, and I think that was a big problem in this election is that people wanted to believe that there was nothing wrong. People wanted to say, well, you know, this cannot be. But the other thing I want to say is that we always want to have somebody up there who's really strong and they take care of everything while we go on with our regular lives, doing what it is day to day and feeling safe, happy, and secure. But I don't think the buck can stop there anymore. The buck has to come stopping into our living rooms. And it doesn't stop. It goes on. So these next 4 years, the buck is going to be in our laps. So whatever happens, we have to take responsibility for it.
Well, and participate. I mean, over the last 4 years, certainly the buck has never stopped in the White House. George Bush still has not taken responsibility.
Oh, no, he's a master blamer.
I don't disagree with you. The other thing I think to keep in mind is that there is, even if you believe that the numbers that came out of the electronic voting machines, which defied the exit polls, even if you believe that those numbers are real and that George Bush won a roughly 52% majority, genuine majority, that still means that there's 47, 48% of America that disagrees. I mean, we're still here.
Yeah,
we're
and then there is the America that's so fed up they don't vote. And I believe those people need to get re-enfranchised because, those people are saying, well, whatever happens, I'm just going to roll along with it. And, you know, that negative vote is a vote for Bush.
Yeah, I was really saddened to see in the preliminary statistics, of course, but, it looks like that roughly only 10% of people ages 18 through 29.
Because in Nevada we had the electronic voting and people were supposed to be able to vote, but the college kids had one place to vote in Reno. There was a line 6 hours long. There was one person sitting at a table. They had to go through extra sign-ups, extra registration, and they had to leave, go back to work, go back to class, until they decided, and the voting machines were empty, till they decided, maybe we ought to have more than one person taking names.
Interesting. I didn't realize that in Nevada.
Yeah.
Marion, thanks for the call.
Thanks,
I appreciate
Tom.
It. Yeah.
Bye.
Keep up the good fight. I mean, there is still a long way to go in the United States. We still have a long way to go. Scott, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Tough circumstances to be back. To be back in touch with you. The reason I haven't been calling is because I've been with my kids for the last couple weeks solid while my wife has been, just cranking on the Kerry campaign. And I guess a few things I want to say, even with the panty-wearing comment guy listening. I'm not afraid to say, my wife came home from about a 14-hour day of work in tears. We were like, Vancouver, here we come.
Yeah. Well, number one, Vancouver isn't going to take you. And number two.
That. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no, I'm serious. Canada just issued a press release. Don't bother. It's going to, you're going to have to wait in line. And number two, America needs us. America needs us. Any nation.
Oh, absolutely.
That has single party rule is in danger.
Absolutely. And I did want to say that I was thinking about some comments that you've made earlier about infiltrating the party of your choice. And I have to say that the hundreds of people at the Kerry headquarters down here in New Mexico had never participated before. And I do feel like that is an energized base from which to move forward. It's incredibly discouraging to hear about the potential fraud in Florida and, the results suddenly being turned around. But in a way, I would not want to be John Kerry inheriting this mess from Bush. And I do think it's going to lead to some incredible political upheaval.
Yeah, this well could have been the equivalent of the election of 28 rather than the election of 32. I'd been thinking it was the election of 32, but this could well have been the election of 28. We'll see. Time will tell. Ultimately... time will tell. Thanks for the call, Scott. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Jane in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Jane, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. This is really a shocker, but anyway, if everybody can't go to Canada, maybe we can go fill the jobs out that the Mexicans are taking from us.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I thought was so funny in listening to the campaign, it seems that everyone just thought about abortion and gay marriages and didn't think about the consequences that were going to happen to Medicare, Social Security, health care, and how they were going to change it. And once they find out about that, they're really going to be sorry. But one thing I wanted to ask you, I couldn't understand how they could get everybody that was in those lines to vote when they had so many places, polling places, closing, like at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock. So did those people ever get the vote?
Yeah, if you were in a line at the time that the polling place was supposed to close, they would put a police officer at the end of the line so the people didn't add to the line after that. Say it closed at 7. They'd put a cop or a polling official at the end of that line, and then they would stay open until the line was done.
Yeah. Well, I
they did that all over the country.
Called you before the last one. He must have been nuts. But anyway, one other comment I wanted to make. All the while that I watched this campaign going on, I feel like I was watching a football game.
Yeah.
And the ads that were coming on, half of the lobbyists, as far as I believe, are retired Republicans.
Yeah.
And they're coming, and they're allowed to go back on the floor because they were former congressmen. And so they can go back on the floor of the House or the Senate and lobby for whomever they want, as well as the Republicans.
Yeah, this revolving door is wrong. It used to be called bribery before the 1940s. I mean, it literally used to be called bribery. It used to be against the law.
That's what it is now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well said, Jane. Absolutely
well
said. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And we need to be doing something about it. Helen in West Virginia is on the line. Hey, Helen, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. This is the biggest disappointment of my life.
Well, you know, every lemon can be made into lemonade, Helen.
I know. The thing of it is, I hope I live long enough to see it change, because we tried so hard. I tried in my area, and I couldn't believe at 7:30 our polls closed here in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And when they closed, 5 minutes later, they announced that the president was over our state. And I can't believe it. I can't believe that it's happened all over this country, and we're still divided.
Yeah.
And I appreciated John Kerry's speech, his concession speech a while ago. I never heard such a more beautiful speech that brought tears to my eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a good man. He's a good man. He's
and
one
John
of the
Edwards
finer too, finer people in politics.
And John Edwards, too.
Yeah.
And God bless our country. I
Amen.
Hope that we can stay firm, stay put, and fight the fight again. And I hope we have people like you, Tom. I can't thank you enough for all you have said and done. You've helped us through some tough times.
Well, thank you, Helen. I appreciate it. It's nice to hear that. I appreciate your kind words, but you are part of it, too. Tag, you're it, right?
Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
Spread the word. Thank you, Helen. I do appreciate the call. 1-866-889-8894. It's the day after The regime change that didn't quite go the way that I was hoping it would, but nonetheless, here we are. Here we are. What are we going to do? Are we going to sit around and cry about it? Are we going to sit around and feel sorry for ourselves? Are we going to sit around and beat ourselves over the head and go, oh, I could have done this? Or are we going to get up, dust ourselves off, and move on our way and hold up a clear and positive agenda for the future of America and work to awaken people? To awaken people. Like poor old Al in Ashland, Kentucky, to how he's been lied to by incredibly wealthy forces in this country that want him to think that while they're picking his pocket and stealing him blind and throwing his children, in the last 3 years, George W. Bush, Al, has thrown your children $23,000 into debt each, if you have any children, assuming you do. And they want you to not look at that. They don't want you to think about it. They want you to think that what's really important is that gays don't have a chance to get married. Not that anybody is saying that they should. I mean, that this was not even gay marriage was not on the ballot anywhere in the United States on a pro basis. I'm starting to rant here, and the lines are lit up. Let's just continue with our phone calls. Ed in California. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Tom.
It's our date event.
Rant is about what I feel.
There you go.
Appreciate it very much what you're trying to do, and guys like Al, that's what we're going to have to listen to. But it's 2 years, and maybe the Democratic National Committee can start realizing that we don't want a lap dog. We want a pit bull.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
I don't want somebody that's going to – he can't keep his self together in the White House. And, of course, the other guy, he kissed his wife too long.
Yeah.
You know, we need somebody up there that's going to call a spade a spade.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think what happened with Perot, remember a few years when he ran, he said, oh, the FBI is investigating my family and everything else, and we thought that he was an old, crazy old man. I'm afraid he was telling the truth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that crazy old coot, Ross Perot, was spot on. You know, he's talking about that giant sucking sound from the South and from China, and poof, here it is. Here it is. Ross Perot was proven
right. We need some pit bulls out there.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. And I have a feeling the loss of Tom Daschle, who I've met and who is a genuinely decent human being, is probably going to lead to somebody more pit bullish, let's say, in the Democratic leadership.
Remember, we went through Prohibition once, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And this is just like prohibition to me.
Well, we're still in prohibition with regard to pot, for example. That's a whole other discussion. But
so many things. But yeah. Remember, we're gonna curb abortions so their kids won't have them.
There you go. Ed, and it's such a critical issue. Ed, thanks for the call. Mike in Santa Fe on the line. Hey, Mike, we got about a half a minute left. What's up?
Well, I don't know. Past the hemlock, I'm sitting.
You and Socrates, huh?
Well, and Socrates, as much as I think, democracy is great and everything, it requires, it requires a cultural faculty to be able to practice it.
Well, I don't think that it's stupid people. I keep saying, we shouldn't be blaming the victims.
I'm not calling anybody stupid. I think our consumerism.
Yeah, there you go. And I agree with you, Mike, and we'll get into that after the break. Thanks for the call.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
A university taps the deep waters of a nearby lake to keep its campus cool. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Cornell University is a major research institution that's located near Cayuga Lake, one of the Finger Lakes in upstate New York. Cornell uses a lot of energy for air conditioning during the summer, and a few engineers found a creative way to use Cayuga Lake to cool off the campus. Lanny Joyce is an engineer at Cornell's Utilities Department, and he helped develop the university's Lake Source Cooling Project. He says Cayuga Lake is so deep that only part of it warms up in the summer. Joyce says there's a layer of frigid water at the bottom of the lake all year long, and the university is using it to cool pipes that provide air conditioning to the campus.
We're saving 87% of the electricity of doing cooling the conventional way, which makes an annual electric use reduction in the neighborhood of $1.5 to $2 million a year. So it's a significant savings in electricity use and something that's a huge benefit to the global environment by not having to generate that electricity in some regional power plant.
The university performed environmental assessments before and after pipes were laid for the cooling system. Some people worried that the lake might warm up because the water that comes back from campus is warmer than when it was pumped out. Joyce says that's not an issue.
The amount of heat turns out in reality to be the equivalent of about 2 hours of additional sunlight over the course of a year.
Cornell's system went into operation 4 years ago. The city of Toronto recently built a modified version of the Cornell system, and it's now using water from the depths of Lake Ontario to cool 100 office buildings downtown. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Don't worry about a thing. Every little bit gonna be all right.
Yeah, it's all going to work out. It does. I mean, this nation has been through maniac presidents who thought they were kings, like John Adams, who passed the Alien and Sedition Acts and threw newspaper editors in prison for daring to criticize him, threw Matthew Lyon, the congressman from Vermont, into prison for saying on the floor of the House of Representatives that Adams was in cahoots with the rich. We have been through a lot. We've been through civil wars. We've been through world wars. We're going to get through this. We're going to get through this tin horn. Well, I'm not going to get into calling names. We're going to get through George Bush. Steve in Huntington, West Virginia on the line. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for allowing me to for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to say thank God for morals and character, and we did not elect a tax and spend Democrat. If people of the United States want to see what Democratic control will do to this country, look at our state. The past 74 years, we've
let me just
under
interrupt
Democratic
you for a second,
control.
Steve. We didn't hire a tax and spend Democrat, so we hired a borrow and spend Republican. You think that's better?
Better shape. Look at what tax and spend has done to West Virginia.
Well, hang on just a second. Years. Let's. We're talking about the presidential race here. The George Bush has borrowed $20,000 in the name of your children for every one of your and in your name.
But
you're not going to pay. Your children are going to pay it. And you think that you think it's okay to borrow and spend. You don't think that we should pay as we go. That's your logic. And you think that somehow makes sense. Do you run your family that way? Do you have, like, you know, $100,000 in credit card debt, and that's how you stay alive?
I can look at the Democratic control and what it's done in the past, and, no, I don't like it. And, you know,
I don't think Democrats should do it either, Al.
I like Bush's idea of Social Security. I would rather have my money working for me rather than subsidizing someone else.
Yeah.
So, no. If people want to see what Democratic control of a nation would look like, take West Virginia, for example. Look at how it is.
No, if people want to know what Democratic control of the nation would look like, look at the period of the United States from the 1930s up through the 1950s, where you saw the emergence of the American middle class. The New Deal, Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal, the Wagner Act brought the minimum wage laws, which the Republicans fought, the creation of Social Security, which the Republicans fought, and they're trying to roll back now. The creation of Medicaid and Medicare, which the Republicans fought and they're trying to roll back now, or they're trying to eviscerate, they're trying to self-destruct. These are the things that created the American middle class. I'm sorry, you're just, you know, it's, you're off base there, Steve. You know, yeah, there's a lot of crazy Democrats, there's a lot of crazy Republicans, and there's a lot of states that are going down the tubes. But no, the conservative economic policies are harming this nation. That's just the bottom line. Thanks to Louise for producing our show today, to Ira for engineering it, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet, to Mike Toth for our archives, and Ben Birch at White Rose Society. To our folks in our chat room, hopefully we'll have it up tomorrow. And to the callers, thanks. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Thank you.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information,